5, 4, 3. I was good that day, but then the next day, like, oh. Live. And we're live, Herb Dean. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How about yourself?
So glad we're finally doing this. You and I have talked about doing a podcast for the last, like, 3 years.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad to be on it. Yeah. Hang out with you. Talk to you for a little bit.
Yeah, I think, and I've said this before, you have the hardest job in the sport other than the fighters. There's the fighters, obviously, they have the hardest job. You have the second hardest job. Referee is the second hardest job in the sport. It's a fucking hard job. Like, you have so much responsibility.
Yeah, I think you have a really hard job. I think how long do you talk for?
It's just hours, 6 hours.
6 hours. And sometimes there's not always something interesting to talk about. So I think it's amazing to be able to talk about that.
It's not that easy. It's not that hard, rather. It's pretty easy. I mean, it's just a bunch of stuff's happening, and you're calling it. And I'm a blabbermouth, so I can't shut the fuck up anyway. So if there's spots where this, it's not that interesting, I'll find something interesting to say. All right. But it's not that. It's, you know, in terms of, like, what's happening is happening. You know what I mean? A guy's getting hit. A guy's getting choked. There's a lot of crazy action going on. And it's really pretty easy if you're a lifelong fan of martial arts like I am
to
call it. You know, as long as you're enthusiastic and you're interested in doing it. And, you know, you got to treat it with respect. You got to treat it for what it is. You know, you're trying to entertain people. Mm-hmm. You're trying to use your words in the most pleasing way possible. You know, you're trying to massage people's ears in a way. You know, you're trying to also represent what you're seeing and how special it is. Especially great fights.
Yeah, I did it a little bit. Not for real. Like, somehow I do this thing that was for these people, Black Belt TV, and I was with Don the Dragon Wilson, and they're just like old fights, and we're supposed to commentate this old fight, and that's why I think it's hard, because I was horrible at it.
Well, old fights are harder, because you might know what's already happened, so you got to play dumb, so it's like almost like you have to be an actor as well as commenting on a fight. I think it would be harder to call an old fight.
Yeah.
Because in the back of your head, you'd be like, I'm a big phony.
Yeah. This fight's already happened. I know what's happening.
This fight has already happened. I think they did that with some of the Pride fights. I think some of the Pride fights, they did the commentary after the action. Because you remember when Pride would come on at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and we wouldn't get it till like a day later or something like that?
I remember one time, the worst is when one of your friends tells you, because you wait, you don't look at the internet. I remember I was training. I trained with Savant one time. I don't know if you know him.
Sure.
Young. Yeah, and we had been in the car the whole time rolling. I was like, when I get home, I'm going to watch Pride. And then right before I dropped him off at his house, right before he gets to the car, he goes, oh, Vanderlei Silva lost. And
they just runs in.
Or something like that. He said something like that.
Yeah, we would have to wait. Sometimes, like, there was a couple events where I feel like it was like a week or something crazy. Wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So you had to like stay off the internet for a week,
which is good for me. You know, I could do it, but you got to also avoid all your friends who are little internet fanatics. They start talking, you're like, stop.
Yes.
I don't know who won yet.
These days, it's so bad. Like, if I go and I do a comedy show on the night of like a big boxing match or something like that, like my text messages tell me. Like, people start sending me they can't wait to spoil shit. They're like, damn, Golovkin got robbed. I was like, what? What happened? Ah, fuck. And then I don't get to just watch it. I want to just come home and hit the DVR and watch it. I'll keep the fuck away from the news.
Yeah. Let me get home.
But then the text messages will get me. It's almost like I can't even read text messages.
Yeah.
God damn it. It's funny, but you don't enjoy a fight, even if it's a great fight, as much if you know what happened.
Yeah, no. You're not. No, you want to watch it for the first time.
Yeah.
As it is, yeah.
Like, I heard that Gaethje knocked out Barboza, and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I didn't
see
that. I haven't seen it.
Oh, my God. Gaethje's a savage. Yeah. He's a savage, man. He's got a special kind of savagery. There's some, you know, like, I guess it's all judged on a spectrum. There's some dudes that are just so ferocious. They're just so willing to wade into battle.
Into engage.
That guy just engages. It's a weird willingness to engage, almost like an almost fearless willingness to engage.
It seems like when he's in there getting it, that's when it seems like he's at his happiest, right?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I ref a fight like that. I ref a lot of fights in Russia. So I refereed a fight with this guy Balayev, Murat Balayev versus Salman. Man, it was for a championship ACA. Man, these guys went to war. He hurt him early on and had him, you know, almost put out, and then he came back. Balayev lost, but it was his. I mean, as an older gentleman, he's over 40. Pushing the pressure and made a really but you could, I saw that energy come out, like when he was struggling through the hard times, you could tell that, like, you know, some sort of battle joy was on him, you know what I mean? He's that kind of guy.
Battle joy,
you know what I mean? Yeah. Uh-huh. You hear it like, oh, he's in it, you know.
Battle joy is real shit.
Yeah, right? Uh-huh. Battle joy.
Diego Sanchez is all full of battle joy.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. Uh-huh,
perfect,
yeah,
example.
Yeah. It didn't die with the Vikings. People are experiencing battle joy to this day. Oh, yeah, there's my man right there.
It is.
Yeah, yeah.
That, uh-huh. You just look at their fucking bodies covered in blood, and you know, like, and this is
as happy as they can be.
God damn, that dude's face is busted up. Yeah, it's did you see the bare knuckle fighting?
I haven't watched any of them yet.
I watched some exchanges between. It's just, it's hard to watch. It's weird. I was a big proponent of bare knuckle. I was like, they should fight bare knuckle because it's ridiculous that you pad up only your gloves, but you don't pad up your elbows shins or your knees. But Jason Knight versus Artem Lobov was it was a weird fight to watch, man. I mean, they beat the fuck out of each other.
They
both came out of it super cut up, man. Like a lifetime's worth of cuts in one fight.
Yeah, and you saw that. It's like, I think it's going to be, it looks like the, Jesus. I saw their faces. That looks like it's going to be some long healing.
Yeah, man. I mean, these guys beat the shit out of each other, bare knuckle. And it is kind of weird that you do recognize, first of all, they're not really, they're bare knuckle, but they're not bare wrist. Like, look how their hands are all wrapped up to prevent them from breaking, which is, it's interesting. It shows us how fragile our hands really are.
No, yeah. And so that's why I didn't really think that a bare knuckle was going to be that, I knew that more intense, but when I'm seeing some of these matches, they are really intense. But at the end of the day, I think the bottom line is still the most dangerous weapons, I think, are the elbows and knees, right?
Yeah, for cuts, for sure.
And for damage, I mean, remember kicks. Those knees that John Jones hit Brandon Vera? I mean, those elbows John Jones hit Brandon Vera?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, John's, from the mount position, from the top, he's got some of the most horrific elbows of all time.
Or even from the guard, right?
Yep, yeah. From anywhere. Yeah. Remember Tito Ortiz never passed guard? Mm-hmm. Never passed guard. Just beat everybody up from inside the guard. Smashed him. He was an expert. Joe Schilling's last fight, he cut that dude up real bad, all from inside the guard. It was horrible, ground and pound with his elbows.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think for the most damage, it's like a wheel kick to the head.
Yeah.
Like, that's the most, like, when you remember when Barboza fought Edom?
Yeah, yeah.
That's like the most damage.
No, the wheel kick to the head is, and that's, man, that, yeah, who used to do that wheel kick to the head? He just fought. Guy, he's from Canada.
Oh, from Canada.
He just fought, but he didn't do a wheel kick. He didn't do it. What was it? He used to get everybody with a spinning back kick.
And he's a UFC guy or fights for? Yeah.
Short, thick guy. Is it McDessie?
John McDessie? Uh-huh. Yeah, John McDessie's a Taekwondo guy.
Yeah, how many people? He caught a couple of people with a spinning back kick, right?
Probably. I mean, he's caught people with a lot of stuff. He's got a full kicking arsenal. But originally like a Taekwondo background. Yeah. It's amazing that you're seeing all these different styles that it's still, even all these years in, there's all these different styles of fighting. Like, they're completely different. You got like the Ben Askren style still, just grab a hold of him, use your superior wrestling, beat his ass. And then you got style bender style.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just full on, super technical striker, tricking you, setting traps. You know, like, as a person who loves striking, like, it's an interesting time. You know, there's so much variety. There's so much shit going on.
And it's so funny because so many things come back and they go back and forth. And there's all these things that people are telling you, you're not supposed to do this or this isn't going to work. And then someone comes up and shuts it all down and says, no, this is going to work. And so it's always so exciting.
How about that Russian dude? What is his name? The guy that Olenek who gets people with a fucking he gets people that Ezekiel from the mount. You're mounting him and he Ezekiels you?
Yeah, yeah. All the time, right? Yeah, Ezekiel will mount, he gets it from your guard. He's in your guard, Ezekiel's you. And and that's exactly the guy. Like he's that guy who everybody
Look at this. Yeah. That is a crazy grip the way he does it. You can see how tight it is. That is amazing that he does that.
No, he has grip like he does scarf hold chokes to people. He's done it to quite a few, and I see him, he laces it up a little different. I think he did one, but he does stuff that nobody else does.
Scarf hold chokes are legit. You got to remember, like Josh Barnett tapped out Dean Lister with scarf hold choke.
I think he's done two people with that, right? He did one guy in the UFC with it. And I think he did it to Krokop. I refereed him in Krokop in Russia once in Moscow, and he did one to Krokop.
Yeah, that scarf hold choke. If you've got a real like that guy, like Olenek does, that kind of death grip.
Yeah,
those guys. Which brings us to the last fight, man.
Yeah, it's a perfect death grip. Yeah. Death grip. Yeah,
That Ben Askren fight, dude. I watched that fight. I watched that finish like 10 times, trying to figure out what happened. Or whether he was out or whether he wasn't out. I was pretty convinced that at one point in time he went out. And then Kamaru Usman changed my mind. Kamaru Usman showed we watched the videotape together. He's like, no, he's giving a thumbs up. And I'm like, shit.
Yeah, okay, so I'm still, because the angles I've seen haven't been the best. I'm trying to see this thumbs up. Was the thumb going up or was the thumb in a thumbs up position going this way?
Right, like as the arm drops, was the thumb in a thumbs up position?
Okay, so when I give somebody a thumbs up, like I'm going to say somebody, good job.
You want this.
Good job, buddy.
Right, good job. Thumbs up. That's what you want.
That's what I want to do, you know? Right. So nobody's going to know whether he was conscious or unconscious. What I saw everything that would indicate I'm seeing an unconscious fighter. I see an arm go limp for no reason whatsoever. And so that's what I have to work with. Because that's what, you know, we don't know what someone's feeling, whatever. We just see if they're doing something that doesn't make sense and you see an arm go limp at that time, you're going to assume that the person's unconscious.
We assumed it.
Yeah.
As the broadcast team.
I can hear you guys. And that I'm supposed to do certain things. And like, so here's the thing with that choke. When I'm refereeing fights, you know, there's sometimes where, you know, some positions are anxiety. Like, you know, you see two guys going after leg locks. You see a noodle mess of legs. And you know you're going to have to help one guy out and figure out who's tapping and make sure you're on the right arm. When I see some chokes, a rear naked choke, especially the guy in the back face up, I take a sigh of relief. My job just got so much easier. This guy, you know, it's not like he's going to go out and then a second take some extreme amount of damage. He may go out. I'll have a second to make sure, not even a second, a half a breath to make sure he's okay. And then let it go out and he's not going to take any other damage. A bulldog choke, we have, anytime you have a choke where somebody's, where there's pressure on the neck and they're bending the C-spine backwards like that, that's a rough situation for me. So I see someone go limp and I know that on top of it, they're no longer putting tension on their neck and their neck is just being bent. I can't see that I should do something different than that. Cause that's the, I like to talk to people about this. I like to talk to people who have opinions about fights, especially people who are interested and who they know what they're talking about. Because if I always have a situation, if I always have a mindset that I'm always doing the right thing, I can't get better. So I'm going to have to look at something and say, is there, you know, a teachable moment there? Is there a way I can learn from this? And is there a way I could do something different? And no, I don't think, I think with that same situation, with an arm going limp, with that type of a choke on someone, I don't know of a defense that requires the arm. You know what I mean? I would think the arm should be doing something else. At this time, I don't see that I should do something different. You know, I'm always interested and always looking and always, I love these type of conversations, but right now I can't think of, you know, and to sell you something, it was an amazing fight.
It was.
Yeah, it was, I mean, first of all, it was the first time I'd refereed Ben Askren. I don't think I'd refereed him before. And, you know, when you're, and his pressure is something special, it's not the normal. And the way Robbie dealt with it, and Robbie had him in trouble. You know, yeah. I was so close to stopping that fight.
When they were on the ground?
Yeah, so many times. God. Yeah,
Robbie was hitting him with some bombs.
Yeah, the amount of respect I have for those two athletes, man, it's like... So that's the thing is, you know, we never want to see anything that could make you have a feeling that it's inconclusive. But I can't think of what else I should have done. But, you know, I mean, especially for that fight for those two guys, you know.
Yeah.
You always want it... Yeah, the people to have a feeling of conclusion there.
Well, when we talked about on the phone, when you brought up the damage, the possible damage to the neck with the bulldog choke, you might be cutting off nerves and you might be bending the spine in a kind of a fucked up way.
Yeah.
I really hadn't considered that. When I was thinking of the choke when he grabbed hold of him, I was just thinking it was a blood choke. But you're right. Like the way you lean in on a bulldog choke, you lean back.
Yeah.
That's so, a lot of pressure on the neck.
I've had some chokes where I've refereed a fight where a guy did one of these moves. You had a move for it, a technique where he's bending the spine backwards.
Twister.
It wasn't a twister. I think guys have a name for it.
Do you know what the executioner is?
So that's what it was.
That's what it is. Can I explain to people? What that is like if a guy is...
Okay, so not to cut you off.
Okay.
So for so long, I've never really wanted to talk about it because people weren't doing it. This was years ago I saw it, but now if there's a name for it, I guess it's okay. But you hadn't seen a lot of people doing it before, right?
Well, we started doing it in 10th Planet a few years back. I think people have done it. What it is, basically, folks, it's like a guillotine from the back. It's like taking you have like rear naked choke hooks, but instead of choking guy this way, which is how you would do it, which is wrap your forearm underneath his neck and wrap the other arm behind his head. Instead of doing that, you wrap your arm all the way around the front like a guillotine hold, but from the back, and you have ungodly leverage.
Right.
It's ungodly how much pressure you can put on someone's neck. And our friend Scott Epstein, he used it quite a few times, so we called it the executioner. Is that it there?
Oh, I'm trying to find a picture of one.
Pull this arm. Is that what he's going to do?
This says the executioner choke. This is a different choke.
Oh.
He calls it the executioner.
I looked that up and nothing came up.
I might have it here for you. Something like this. This is a little different. This guy had arms in. This is different, but it's similar.
Oh, yeah, it's similar, though. That's similar. Yeah, you could have arms in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the same thing. Yeah, this is it. That's 100% it. So, I don't know if we're going to show people that.
Right.
Either way, it's a real bad place to be in. Oh, yeah. This guy got it? Yeah, that's
okay.
That's Scott Epstein. That's the north south choke.
Is that it, or is that?
But what he would do if he wanted to do an executioner is he would get his hips underneath the guy and get back position. This is just a really good north south choke.
So yeah. So what I saw was the guy went north south, and he this was years ago at a King of the Cage in way out in Wisconsin, and he had. Wow, this is a long, long time ago. He had north-south, and he sat up. Once he had the guy, he sat up and pulled the guy's body up onto him in almost a sitting position, and then put hooks.
Right.
And then I've done it before where I'll roll the guy to the side, and I'll put, just to walk it through and figure out how it worked. He put hooks, and I was sitting there. I was like, okay, this isn't illegal. If I stop this fight, it's not... You know, or this is not an illegal move, but I don't want to see how this plays out. And the guy got one hook in, and almost the second hook was about to go in. The guy tapped, and when I pulled him off, the guy couldn't move.
His neck was fucked up.
Yeah, he couldn't move. You know, he had some sort of stinger. I don't know what's going on. He couldn't move. He was terrified. I was terrified. Yeah, and then it kind of, you know...
Came back.
Came back, yeah.
Jesus. Yeah, I know of several guys that have gotten paralyzed because of defense from a guillotine or trying to take a guy down. You know, when someone gets you in a guillotine.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah, so that's why with some submissions, you know, especially some of the chokes, it's like, okay, things are slowing down and, okay, things are getting a little bit easier for me. With that one, things are not easy at all. That's not something that I want to play with. I think if... you know, I'm kind of disappointed with some people have a platform I don't want to mention any names, but some people have a platform of kind of tossed it out. It was something sensational and say, oh, look at this. Is he wrong or right? I think that's a little irresponsible when it's some dangerous techniques like that.
Well, I think you really pointed that out about the neck in a very important way. And I think that's something that people should really take into consideration when you see someone. You've seen people. Have you ever refereed someone who got caught in a twister?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a horrible place to be.
It's a horrible place to be.
It's so your neck is so fucked up and there's so much pressure, and the fact that your left leg's isolated and your head's getting pulled, it feels like it's going to break.
It's a fucked up place to be, even for the fact of the way it's set up, because it's not like a fast thing that catches you off guard. No. It's a long road to it.
Yeah.
So you know it's coming. You know it's coming, and you're like, I'm doing this, but I know how this is going to probably end, and you're doing some little
there's a Chan Sung Jung, Korean zombie. I think he got the first ever one on Leonard Garcia. I think that was the first. Look at that
in
that
the UFC.
Is so horrible, dude. That is so bad. That feels so terrible.
Yeah,
and then there's DEFCON 4 where you take a rear naked choke grip from the twister position.
Oh yeah, okay, I've seen that.
You're just ripping dudes' heads clean off. It's horrible. You know, all those crazy, like, catch wrestling, neck manipulation things.
Right.
Those things make my neck hurt just looking at them.
Yeah. So anyway, that's why I think, you know, you can't always say, look at things as good or bad. But, you know, some situations I've seen referees in, and that one I think is a difficult situation. Not so. I've seen other harder situations, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
It's an unusual one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen quite a few bulldog chokes that put someone unconscious. Most recently, Raquel Pennington against Ashley Evans-Smith. It was a crazy fight. Raquel Pennington's so fucking tough. I mean, that was a crazy fight, man. It was just war and chaos. And then with like 1 second to go, she chokes her out and then lets her go. And she's asleep from the bulldog choke. And Ashley Evans-Smith steps up covered in blood. I mean, it was fucking crazy. That was crazy. But there's that one. Didn't Chris Lights Out Lytle catch Tiki in a bulldog choke? I think he did.
Maybe. Of course, we're going to go
Carlos Newton.
That's the title. Yeah, that's that looked really tight.
Yeah, forget that.
That's the one.
Go to Carlos Newton chokes out Pat Miletich, because this was for the title, and he caught him in a bulldog choke, and it is like I don't think we had a name for it. I think we used to call it a schoolyard headlock back then. Yeah,
somebody called it a bulldog choke at that time. I remember people were calling it a bulldog choke.
Oh, like it already had that name.
I don't know if it had there. Maybe they gave it to, but yeah.
It's a legit move.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a legit move. Like, especially if you're a Ben Askren type dude with that kind of grip.
Right,
you get a hold of someone's neck in that position.
Yeah, like, yeah.
It's horrible. Yeah. That was... that's why I say that referees have the hardest job, because you're in that situation. You do have to take those things into consideration. What kind of damage is this doing to this guy's neck? Is he out? His arm went limp. Okay, when do I step? I gotta save him.
That is the tough part about it. You know, we're evaluating a situation. As always, there's different, and you're evaluating the threat to the person. You're evaluating if there's a threat coming, how well can they deal with it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff going on there. And, you know, we take it really serious. I take it really serious. It's to me, I feel that I have a sacred trust. I feel that it's one of these positions that, like, our athletes are not stupid people. A lot of them could be doing a lot of things with their life, and they've chosen this path to, and they take time from their family, they take time away from other careers where they could be progressing, and all to meet their dreams and hopes, and I need to balance that with their safety. So it's something I think about a lot, you know what I mean? Even in the way I talk to my friends, you know what I mean, to always, you know, I'm always working as a referee. Anytime I'm out in the streets or with friends, people are going to ask me, what do I think about this fight, or who do I think can be better? And because of this job you're doing, you no longer have the luxury of having, you know, of talking about mixed martial arts in the fun way about who's going to win and how's this going to happen, because who knows, I might referee the fight.
Right, right.
And everyone's going to be on the internet. Like, Herb's refereeing the fight, and we were having beers yesterday. And guess what he told me?
Right.
Yeah, it's just, you know, so yeah, I take it serious.
No, you do, and I'm glad you have that attitude. What is this one right here? Oh, yeah, this is Carl. Mm-hmm. This is Carlos right here.
Yeah, yeah.
In the transition, he grabs the neck. And it's a crazy visual, too, because the photograph, you see the muscle right there. I mean, that is crazy muscles in Carlos's arm and shoulder and neck. Look at that. Carlos Newton, champion of the world. Right there, that moment. Isn't that crazy? Carlos had some spectacular grappling early on, man. Wild transitions.
Yeah, he was amazing.
Beautiful jiu-jitsu.
His explosiveness, his agility. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was so athletic. He was doing stuff that no one else. Yeah.
He also had a really high level submission game early on.
Yeah.
Like in 96, 97. Yeah. A lot of people didn't have that kind of a game, and his submission game was tight. The Matt Hughes one was crazy. Remember that?
Yeah, that was crazy. That
triangle
choke where he had him up and
he puts him to sleep. Uh-huh. And as they get up, Matt Hughes, like, you hear his coroner saying, like, stand up, you won. He's like, what happened?
Yeah. They're a double knockout. Yeah. I have that one. I have one at King of the Cage, a double knockout.
There it is,
crazy.
Right here.
Yeah.
This is, look how goddamn strong Matt Hughes was. He was so fucking strong.
That ability.
He holds him up there, and Carlos is trying to.
He's squeezing.
He's squeezing. So Matt goes unconscious. He's out cold.
He doesn't know what's going on.
And no one knows what's going on. And so Carlos's head hit the ground when he went down like that. Mm-hmm. And that knocked him out.
Right.
And then Matt woke up from the choke. And they're like, you won.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I was like, what? It's great. That was a crazy scene. That scene was a tough one. That was like, what do you do there?
Yeah.
Well, that was like the thing about this Robbie Lawler-Ben Askren fight. Like, Usman was saying, they got to run it back. And I was like, it wouldn't be a bad thing to run it back. I mean.
Well, at the same time, you know, we got to be honest here. Like, as far as running it back, how many of the fights that happen in the UFC are there because it's exciting what people want to see?
Yeah. Most.
Right. So
Brock Lesnar DC is a perfect example, right?
So that's exciting as people want to see it. And some of the excitement has been generated by throwing me under the bus, but cool. You know what I'm saying? Cool. Give the people another time. Dude, I'm taking it. I got big shoulders. I can take it.
You handle it great.
But yeah, no. So yeah, I think, you know, anytime that, you know, the athletes get to do what they do and people are going to watch it again and people are going to be excited about it, you know, I don't know.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen now, at least not immediately, because Masvidal and Ben Askren have a date for July. Mm-hmm. They're going to do that July show in Vegas. That's a great fight. I like that fight a lot.
Right.
That's Masvidal's in a new place, man. Mm-hmm. You could really tell. He's something special right now. He's something really special. When he knocked out Till like that, I was like, whoa. When he knocked out Cowboy, I was like, wow.
Yeah, no, Masvidal's a beast.
He's so good, man. And he seems like extra focused right now. You know, like, I think he's probably like, what is he, 35? Somewhere in that range.
Is he that old, huh?
How old is Jorge Masvidal? He's either 34 or 35. He's coming on soon. Mm-hmm. Having him on the podcast soon. Yeah, he
turns 35 in November.
Yeah, so he's at that stage of his career. Mm-hmm. Where you kind of like, look, man, how much more time do you got? Like, realistically, as a professional mixed martial arts fighter at 35 years of age. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're Anderson Silva, you have like three more years of his prime, two more years, something like that.
Right.
You get to be 38, 39. Like, that's kind of it. You know, unless you're doing something to spice up the pot.
Right.
You know, like 40, 41, 42, man, tough. Tough to compete.
Yeah, tough to compete.
On the natch.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a whole another.
This TJ thing is a bummer. That's a bummer. If you don't know what we're talking about, TJ Dillashaw tested positive for injectable EPO, which is a serious performance-enhancing substance. And in some circumstances, according to Jeff Nowitzki, it's given people strokes. And I had heard this too, that like young guys doing like Tour de France type shit would have strokes because they were taking too much EPO. Because, you know, like if you're supposed to take one, take two, fuck it.
Right.
That's the mentality of those savages.
Anybody who's going to do that.
Yeah.
That, you know.
Shit turns your blood to paint.
And I think that's probably the discipline, right, of how people were always getting away with things beforehand, right, is to try to. Maybe try to do it in a way where they won't get caught. But I think that's like, oh, if this much is good, then this much more is going to be better. And
And we know guys who've done that with TRT. You know, there was a few TRT tests where when TRT was legal, testosterone replacement therapy, where you would hear about guys testing like 1400s, 1470, like, which is insane. It's like superhuman. No person's ever lived that has 1400, like as a natural walking around testosterone level. That's crazy, hyperhuman.
Right.
But they just get these benefits from that.
Well, some of these people, though, who walk around naturally, I wonder if they've never been tested, though.
That's true.
Yeah. Right. Some of these people I see walking around, I'm like,
genetic freaks.
Yeah, that dude looks like he was born on steroids.
Yeah. Man. There are some freaks, man. Yeah. There's some legit genetic freaks. To deny that would be crazy. There's some people that just, like, Yoel Romero. I mean,
yeah.
What in the fuck? It doesn't matter how many steroids you take. It doesn't matter what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to do look like that, you have to be a genetic freak.
Yeah, you know? and they're out there.
Oh, they're
walking around.
There.
It's not fair.
Well, Yoel was talking about it. He was saying, go to Cuba.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Go see the genes. Go see the genes.
Yeah.
Go to Cuba. Look around.
Yeah, what's his name? What was it? The fighter from France, the heavyweight from France. I mean, he was
Francis Ngannou.
Well, yeah, Francis Ngannou was a guy who used to be the one who had the crazy fight with Pat Barry.
Oh, like, Chet Congo.
Chet Congo, man.
Oh yeah. Adonis.
Yeah,
sculpted Greek statue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just always imagine, like, I want to go to him, where he comes from. I want to just take a look around.
Probably super athletes.
Yeah,
probably a lot of meat eaters. The TJ thing, apparently they went and tested his old fight piss with Cody too, and that tested positive for EPO as well. And then Cody started freaking out.
Yeah, that's right.
What do you do if they go back? Like, what if they decide to go back, hey, and say, fuck it, let's test all the fights.
Mm-hmm.
And it finds out that he was doing it like 5, 6, 7 fights. What do you do?
Well, yeah, and then what do you do if you but then it's a whole other can of worms, too, because, like, all the fights, and then what about all the, because...
Right. Like, are we going to test everybody?
Yeah,
Brendan Schaub and I were joking around last night, and I was like, test them all. And he was going, no. I go, test them all. Test everything. Let's find out. Let's know what it was. Let's know what it was. And he's like, what if they had piss samples from, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago? Like, what... If they could use USADA-style testing today,
right, today
on people
yeah.
from the past.
I'm so glad that all these things are above my pay grade.
Yeah, you don't have to deal with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I man, just, if I was the guys
and, yeah.
in the office right now, in charge of that program, you have to really wonder, where is the line? You certainly want to test a guy for a fight that happened a week ago. You certainly want to hold, mm-hmm. you know, and check if some new testing methods come out. If there was a fight from a year ago, you certainly would check that. How many years back do you go, though?
Yeah.
Especially if it's not expensive. Like, what if it's easy and cheap to do a test?
Yeah.
So you just run 500 tests on the last 500 championship fights, and then you have, like, 400 fights that you now have to, like, change the result of.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
Last night I was joking around.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying test them all. I was taking the fun position, test them all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. I mean, look, we all know at one point in time, performance-enhancing drugs were a huge part of mixed martial arts, and that's why the UFC stepped up and decided to institute this program.
I think it's a big part of professional sports in general.
Sure, 100%. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, combat sports, you know, has government oversight that other sports don't have. So I think that it's going to be coming up regardless anyway. So I think maybe that's why the UFC took a position, right? Because I think of the other sports, I mean, guys get caught doing things, but a lot of the other sports regulate themselves, right?
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I think the NFL regulates itself.
What other sport has a government body like an athletic commission saying, hey, we're going to show up and do this or do that.
I don't know. Like, what do they do with baseball?
I don't know. I don't know much about other sports, but I've never heard of like a, we all know about, we you know, that's something different in our sport, is
Jamie's
that the government's involved.
Well, they should have a commission, but not like he's saying a government commission, but they just, they're governing themselves. The NFL would have a vote. They hand down a suspension. They're not fair from this guy's suspension to that guy's suspension. In baseball, they have like a 3-strike rule. Like the first time is like somewhere in the 10 to 25 game range, and then the second one is like half the season. Mm. Third one, mm-hmm. you're out for a whole year, and if you do it again, you're banned.
Yeah, but there's no outside government body, right, who shows up and decides to test your champion, right?
Just the baseball or NFL or basketball deciding what's the
Well, let's say you have a big money maker in your sport, and then somebody outside of your company just comes along and says, yeah, I'm a government body. I have the right to test this guy.
Yeah, like what happened with John Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a perfect example. I mean, the UFC did not want John Jones to test positive. He is the biggest star right now, other than Conor, and Conor's not active, and John Jones is fighting all the time. He wants to fight all the time. But that's the only way you ever find out what's really going on, is you hire a bunch of werewolves. And you just let them loose. Go check piss. Go. Go out there. check everyone. They check the shit out of people. I was looking at this list of people that Holly Holm's been tested more than like. I think Nowitzki might have put it. Oh, Stipe Miocic tweeted it because he'd been tested 38 times.
Really?
Yeah. Some people, it's like in the 40s. Chris Cyborg got tested a lot. Yeah.
And Holly Holm got tested a lot, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Holly Holm got tested a lot. A lot of people got tested. It's just like crazy numbers. And a lot of them, I guarantee you, they're waking them up.
Yeah.
You know, getting them up like 6 in the morning.
That's what I've heard. I mean, I don't know what they go, but I've heard conversations a little bit. It doesn't seem like it's...
No, they want to make sure you're there so they get there real early.
Early in the morning. But and
that's
yeah.
fucked up.
And you're supposed to tell them where you're supposed to, where you're going to be at and think,
The problem is, if you're training hard, that 8 to 10 is so huge. You might get hit with a punch. If they wake you up after like 6 hours or 5 hours, it's possible that a punch might connect on you that wouldn't have connected if you got 8. That's not bullshit.
Yeah. Right? That's real.
That's real, right?
That's real.
Everybody knows how you feel good in the gym, and everybody knows, even if you just lift weights, there's days you feel good, there's days you feel like crap.
I made sure I showed up here well rested.
You look well rested. Uh-huh.
And I'm hydrated. I'm like, did we get bathroom? Excellent. I did hydrate.
Good deal. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just not smart to stop athletes in the middle of their training camp and wake them up.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the testing, but I feel like the testing's so sophisticated. You could get to them at noon, okay? Just you could get to them at noon. You got good testing now.
I don't know that.
I don't know that either. I'm talking shit.
Yeah, because I think the best time, right? The best time is that, you know, maybe the earlier the better, right?
Maybe. I don't know. The thing about this EPO, apparently, and this is what Shab was telling me, was that it didn't used to be detectable the way it is now. They've got these new methods of detection. And EPO's one, too, that apparently, from what I've read, don't listen to me, I'm not a doctor, they can absolutely tell that you injected it. It's injectable. It comes in the injectable form. That's what's in the body. So there's no chance of a tainted steroid or tainted supplement.
Right.
It's definitely EPO. So that's fucked up. Because apparently that stuff has a giant advantage. It gives you an anabolic advantage. It also gives you crazy recuperative powers. So like you could train really hard and then be ready to go the next day.
Yeah. What do you think the answer is? Because like for me, like this is all stuff that like, to be honest, I don't really pay that much attention to it because I don't have, it's out of my wheelhouse to deal with. But also, it's hard to have an answer. Like you said, like, do we go back and keep testing them when these new things come?
Do with the history books?
It's very interesting, you know?
Yeah, what do you do with the history books? That's what you would say. Like, at what point, if you have samples that date back 10 years, do you test them all? Like, what do you do? I don't know. I don't know how long they keep samples or who has them or how they, you know, what's the chain of command. I don't know, man. It's just, but if you find out that TJ tested positive for the Cody fight too, well, Cody sure has an argument there. And what if it's the fight before that? What if
a lot of people who have arguments.
Yeah,
there's a lot of guys. Yeah, so it's tough.
To me, it's a shame too because I'm a TJ fan and I think he's a phenomenal fighter and I'm a big fan of watching him perform. But just it taints his legacy. It just does. There's no way around it. When you get caught cheating, which is this stuff is there's no way it's not cheating. I mean, this is just cheating, right? I mean, this isn't any accident. It taints your legacy,
right?
And the guy had an amazing legacy. You know, two-time bantamweight champion, one of the best pound-for-pound fighters. The way he beat Henan Barao, I was like, holy shit. So he went out and fought Henan Barao like he was sparring with
right,
him.
Right, yeah, yeah. His stuff, the stuff, some of his fights were amazing.
He's amazing.
And, yeah.
Doesn't take away from the fact that he's amazing. TJ's an amazing fighter. But fuck, man. To test positive for EPO and the Henry Cejudo fight.
And it was also crazy to watch the progression, all the work he did and how much, you know, he was getting better every fight until so he focused. Became this, yeah.
But you got to think, like, how much, like, if you're on EPO, how much does that really allow you to train extra time? How much does that allow you to recover? What's the benefit? Like, what is the quantifiable benefit? It must be pretty significant because there's a lot of, you know, the cyclists, a lot of heavy-duty endurance athletes use it.
Yeah.
I almost want to try it. You know, they say that these executives are trying it. They're doing EPO and entering into triathlons and shit like that.
Really?
For bragging rights. Yeah, just assholes. Assholes with money are taking EPO. Like, really, I was reading the thing about an epidemic of...
really, it boosts you that much. Like, okay, you're going to take it and you're going to notice that you're able to, like... Like, the other day, you could barely finish a loop around the Rose Bowl, a three-mile loop, and then you start taking it and you can get, what, 5-6 miles in.
I wonder. I think what it does is it raises your threshold if you're already an elite endurance athlete, too. I think for them, that's what it is. It's like they're already looking for that extra edge. So they're already an elite endurance athlete. They're already in the Tour de France. And they take that APO, and it's like, what? Just jacks them up. They could just do more work. They have more oxygen. They don't run out of juice. And for a guy like TJ, his style is so kinetic. There's so much movement, explosion, switching stances. Like, he needs that juice. It's not like a calm, easy game where he's, you know, everything's fast, 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 fast. It's crazy. It's hard. It's a hard one to swallow.
Yeah, man. So for me, like, I was like, man, I was going to come on Joe Rogan's show. And let's see, what was he could he talk about to make me uncomfortable to talk about? Maybe some hard stoppages. Man, I would talk about some hard stoppages. Give me, what's the worst? Well, let me talk about when I made a mistake. I don't want to talk about this.
You don't want to talk about EPO?
No, I'm just being, because I have no answer for it. Yeah, I don't understand. Either. I just like, all I'd want to, like, I just doesn't feel like a good conversation because all I could do is just, it just get, like you said, it's just going to take away from what I've seen of as, and then the more I imagine about it, it's just going to be more takeaway. And then anything I could say or think about, I can't think of anything that's solution or it's just,
Yeah, I don't think anybody, I mean, I think we're in this stage right now where they're probably looking at the data going, okay, what does this signify? And how many more people should we test?
Mm-hmm.
You know, once they develop a new method of testing, that's the whole reason why they want to keep the old samples anyway, in case new, more sensitive methods of detecting are invented.
And you know about this stuff, because I know that you're a science freak, and you're a science,
dork,
especially when it comes to anything that can enhance this life that we have on this earth. So, yeah, I'm sure you know a lot about this stuff.
Well, I've had a really amazing conversation with many people about it. And David Sinclair was one of the more recent ones who did this discussion about life extension and different anti-aging solutions and different things that they're coming up with. But what I've come through with is, at the other end, is there are probably hundreds of thousands of people that are involved in either legitimate supplements or legitimate molecules or testing hormones on people or, you know, trying all these different things to try to figure out how to get the body to perform better. Mm-hmm. Some of them are legal and some of them are illegal. And that's where it gets strange. You get like the guy, like the Balco guy,
right.
Victor Conte comes along. It's like, look, I got one. You just rub it on. No one's going to know shit. They don't even know what this stuff is yet.
Uh-huh.
And for a while, yeah, that worked.
But while
it worked, everybody's like, why is Barry Bonds getting so big? You know, people just started wrecking, like, come on, man. Look at me, Sammy Sosa. Look at me in the eye. What are you doing? You know, and they all like exhibited these obvious physiological changes where you could tell that whatever they were doing was really effective stuff. there's hundreds of thousands of people working on that right now, all the time.
Right, on all times.
Trying to get it better. There's probably thousands of people that are trying to come up with stuff that sneaks past this testing. You know? Did you ever see...
That's why I just stick to Bikram yoga, man.
It's a good move. Did you ever see that Icarus documentary?
I think I did. It was about who?
It was the Russian anti-doping scandal. Oh, yeah, uh-huh. Did you see that
one? I didn't see that, no.
It's amazing. It's amazing. The guy who made the documentary, the whole thing sort of happened by accident. It's a guy named Brian Fogel. Mm-hmm. And his documentary was on, he was going to do a bike race, and then he was going to come back the next year and do the bike race on steroids and see what the difference was. And so he was going to document it all, and he was going to have this Russian anti-doping guy. This guy was going to oversee his program, tell him what to take and how much to take and when to take.
Make sure he doesn't get caught.
Make sure he didn't get caught. That was one of them, I think. I don't think they drug tested most of the things that he was interested in doing. I think the thing he was doing, he just wanted to see how good he could get.
Okay, because you said Russian anti-doping guy.
Yeah, so I was, this is where it gets to. In the middle of him doing this Russian anti-doping guy, it comes out that the Russians cheated at the Sochi Olympics, and this Russian anti-doping guy spills the beans to this guy and explains the Russian state-sponsored doping program, that they state-sponsored and doped all their athletes, so everyone was on steroids, and that they hid the urine. They had two separate, separate room where they transferred the dirty urine through a hole in the wall and slipped out the good urine, and they put it back in place. So they substituted clean urine for the urine that was collected. They opened up the bottles. They found these microscopic scratches on these supposedly unopenable caps for these bottles, but they ran them under microscopes. They're like, look, they were scratched. These things have been opened. The Russians had figured out a way to open the bottle without cracking the seal. they swapped piss. I mean, it was like super sophisticated stuff. And this guy details all of it by accident, just because he had hired this guy to give him drugs so he could. He was just trying to run a documentary. Let's see how much better steroids make me at riding the bike. And when all this stuff broke, he just came in at the right place at the right time. And it's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. That's why Russia won like all these gold medals in the Sochi Olympics. They were all juiced to the tits.
And you're saying all of them, huh?
Yes.
It's just for me, like it's one of those things. Like I just don't have an answer to it. I know there's always going to be people who are going to look for an advantage.
Yeah.
And I think as long as there's one person looking for an advantage, then I think there's some people are going to have the attitude that if there's an advantage out there, I'm a fool for not taking it.
Right.
The people who don't take it are people who are gifted in some way or have just a work ethic that goes beyond, and it's a matter of pride that they don't do it. You know what I mean? Like when you're a sharp kid, it's like a matter of pride to never cheat on a test, whereas some people, that's their go-to, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like what's legal and what's not legal? Like, what should you be allowed to do? Should you be allowed to use cryotherapy? What if it turns out that cryotherapy ramps up your hormones? What if it turns out that cryotherapy speeds up your recovery that's commensurate with a steroid?
But why shouldn't you be able to use it?
You should be able to. But yeah. I'm just saying.
Because I think the basis of it is that some of these other things are supposed to be maybe dangerous for you.
EPO
that,
for sure.
Is that that's the reason? That's the base
not
reason.
Not really.
That's our base reasoning, right?
I think the base reasoning is cheating.
Well, no, not just cheating, because it's not cheating if everyone's doing it.
They're supposed to be
dangerous stuff. So, like, you know, like you
hormones.
Can use. Yeah, no, but I'm talking about hormone. Like, you can use vitamins or anything, or you can have good nutrition. It makes sense. Anything that's going to make you better at what you're doing. But there's ones that we don't want people to use because they're dangerous to use for those reasons. I think that's supposed to be the reason, right?
I do not know if that reason makes sense.
I know. I'm not saying whether it makes sense or not, but I think that's supposed to be the. Because when does it come down and say, well, we don't want you using any artificial supplements. Vitamins, we want you to get all your vitamins from your food. What you're doing is you're getting some of your vitamins artificially, and it's not the way a human being gets it. So, like, there's a line that's being drawn somewhere.
Right.
And I'm saying the line is being drawn at what is supposed to be safe. At one point, it got drawn at that and then became something else, maybe. I don't know.
I think if they were really concerned with safety, they wouldn't let them fight.
Well, we're talking about all sports.
I know, but I mean, especially like with fighting, if you're really concerned with safety, let's just cancel the whole event. Like, someone's going to get hurt.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of things they're safe. You know, we don't like the fighters to jump on the top of the cage, too, because hilarious. It's unsafe.
Yeah.
Because it's unsafe.
Well, they were just kicking each other.
Yeah, kicking each other in the face. But no. Hey, get down off that cage. What are you doing up there celebrating?
They get
celebrating up there. Yeah.
Yeah. The celebrating thing is funny, man. Mm-hmm. Let them celebrate.
Yeah, but they don't like them to do a flip. Well, one guy Gaethje did a flip. He did a flip and landed on. One guy did a flip and landed on someone, so I get that. But it's like, man, I trust the guy to get kicked in the neck, but I'm not going to trust him to do a flip. He's probably done a flip before. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Gaethje almost landed on the guy his last fight.
Yeah, and that's Barbosa. Well, somebody else gets hurt. Now I get that.
What if he killed a doctor? How much of a suspension do you get if you kill a doctor with a backflip? Like, for real. Imagine if a doctor's running in and Gaethje just off going the top to help. Rope, dang, and it would be the ultimate world star video. Derek Lewis, would he have that on his Instagram? Would he keep that on his Instagram if someone died, if it was a UFC? He might. He's so savage.
His Instagram's pretty funny.
It's the best Instagram in the game. If any, you want to see, I saw one the other day of a guy on a motorcycle on his Instagram drove right into a fucking telephone pole. Guy wasn't paying attention or something. He went off the side of the road and hit a fucking telephone pole full on.
Oh.
Oh, just slammed into this pole. Like, fuck, man. I got to stay off Derek's
Instagram. Yeah, no, I don't like to watch that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that guy's never going to be the same. He's either dead or he's never going to be the same.
Yeah, like the one I saw. What's that one where you saw where the guy was going to jump off a house into a...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what happened to that man. Head.
That guy's got to be dead. A lot of them are dead.
I mean, I've got something on my Instagram about the guy who got hit by a dolphin. I just put that up there the other day. I saw somebody put it up.
Guy got hit by a dolphin?
Yeah, he was doing some paddleboarding, and the dolphin was living life a little bit. Dolphin was doing his thing. So there, you know how he's paddleboarding out, and there's a wave coming, and then you can see the dolphins. You know, they like to surf, so they get in the wave. They're doing their thing, and I think the dolphin sees him. He's the only one who decides to come out of the water and get a little air. He's like, oh, it's a paddleboarder. Get a little air. Bow.
And he fucks him up?
Yeah, here we go.
Whoa, look at this.
Back it.
Oh, that's 100% on purpose.
Like, it makes you wonder about dolphins. Like, a dolphin's like, oh, what an opportunity.
That is 100% on purpose.
Yeah, I had to put that. I had to post that on Instagram.
Yeah, that guy's all right.
Yeah, he's all right.
Dead. He fell in the water.
But a dolphin's heavy.
Yeah, he got side-checked.
He got a little side-checked.
What do you do in that moment? Do you hit him? Do you hit the dolphin? Do you punch it?
No, I have respect.
But he's trying to fuck you up.
I'm like, the dolphin got the air. I'm like, hey, you're having a little fun. Yeah, because how much does the dolphin weigh, and it's his element?
It's a big animal.
Yeah, you got to get back to the shore.
That is pretty funny, though.
Yeah, walk that one off.
Yeah, you don't elbow it as it's coming at you.
Yeah, you don't want to piss him off.
You're in their neighborhood.
And that's clearly on purpose.
Yeah.
That's clearly, it's like, you fucking dummies, get out of the way, bitch.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You're not even surfing.
Yeah.
Paddleboarding. Paddleboarding is surprisingly hard.
I wonder if his friends laughed.
Oh,
the other dolphins? Yeah, he's talking to his friends. Okay. Yeah.
They probably thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I went paddleboarding. It's not easy.
I didn't think it was hard. Did it? You stand, straight like this, you don't have to.
But I tried to surf. That was hard. There was a lot of waves. Mm-hmm. It was a little woggly. But I was like, I thought this would be way easier. I fell twice. Jamie's making fun of me. Stop it, bro. Yeah. Paddleboarding is one of those things where it's like, it's you're just mostly using your core, right? You're balancing everything out.
I mean, I'm not an expert at it. I did it once or twice when I was in Hawaii, you know. Hanging out with the fam.
Looks like if you got like placid water, it'd actually be calming.
Mm-hmm.
Paddleboard. You ever surf?
I'm trying. I said I'm going to do it this year. I took some lessons. I did a little bit. I've been up on some wave. The water was pushing me, but I can't. I can't call it surfing. What I was doing. But I was in the water. I was having fun.
That's a respectable thing to know how to do.
Yeah.
Right? When you hear someone can surf, you're like, oh, wow.
Well, no, I've decided that I have to do it. I've been living in California all my life. I'm paying to be a surfer. I live here. I pay the
surfing tax.
The surfing tax, but I'm not going to the beach and getting my money's worth. I got to go and get it.
Yeah. When we think about how many people live in LA, how few actually go to the beach.
Right.
Yeah. Beach is not that crowded.
No,
in it's comparison not. To how many fucking people live here. It's one of those things that people just take it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So would you surf?
No. Yeah. No, I'm scared of sharks.
Yeah, so I started the quest last year. So last year I took a couple of lessons. So this, you know, when it gets a little warmer, I'm going to do it again.
We were thinking about doing a surfing challenge for Sober October. It was going to be like time spent up on a board
mm-hmm.
for the entire month. So okay. We're going to have a contest.
All right, are you going to be doing it?
We haven't decided, and I think the guys are... They don't want to do the surfing thing.
If you do it, let me know. I want to do it with you.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-oh.
It'd be a little cold in October, wouldn't it? Maybe?
Yeah, that's the idea, pussy. Oh,
okay. All right.
Come on.
Oh, here, I'll freak you out.
Fear.
Did you see this
video?
Is
it cold in October?
Barely. It's like 85 degrees.
Because September is
our water. What is happening with this?
It happens very fast. The way I saw it, this is a Navy, US, or a French Navy man jumped off a boat to celebrate, and as he's in the water here.
A shark comes after him.
Yeah, it just comes out of nowhere. No one can really see it. And all of a sudden, right at the last second, they spot it. And they're like, oh, shit, get the fuck out of the way. It just nibbles, like, at his foot.
A little nibble.
It almost looks fake, but the way he reacts, it's not.
I don't think that shit's fake at all.
But it just happened all of a sudden. He's just in the water.
Man, that's how it goes. That's their world.
Yeah.
Look, you can't even see anything in there. That's the thing that freaks you out the most about the ocean is the possibility. It's like you're just looking down. You don't see a goddamn thing. And all of a sudden, the Meg.
Yeah. I like that Australian guy. Remember the Australian surfer and the shark was coming after him and he was just pushing him away. When he talked about it, he was looking like he wanted to bite me. I decided I didn't want him to, so I just pushed him away a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You just fought off a shark, man. I didn't want to be bitten, so.
That's a good attitude to keep.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in this. I'm not freaking out, but I'm not interested in this.
I don't want to be bit. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to freak out. Right. Yeah. If you freak out, they probably can sense it. If you really spaz out in the water, they probably know. Oh, this guy's scared as fuck. It's time to eat.
This guy smells like food.
They apparently don't like to eat us. Is this the guy right here?
Yeah, I think so. It's got 8 million views.
Shark surprises solitary surfer.
I haven't seen this one. This is not the one I'm talking about.
You were talking
about
the one he's swimming, right?
Oh, this could be something I don't
look right
see.
Behind him. Oh, Jesus, Louises.
Surf.
Fuck out of there.
No, I think he saw it. He's like, yikes. Oh, man, but he's paddling with his arms.
Looking like a seal.
With every time he paddles, the arm could disappear on him.
Surf.
Yeah, fuck. But you're so helpless in their world. It's like, you ever see what happens when a shark gets beached?
I was looking for this video the other day. We found that one where you were like, "Why? Just pick it up and throw it out there."
In the water.
There's a video I saw of a girl literally doing that, just like a chick in a bikini. It's a smaller shark, but she just grabs it by the tail, yanks it.
Good for her.
Throws it out there. But the problem was with the one, you can't. Sharks don't just start swimming when they get put in the water. They need to be, like, they can't stop moving really. So they got to have a little shove. I don't know. It's hard to do too. They had to drag that shark out by a boat to sort of get it going, to get water in its gills so it can breathe and whatnot.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's got to be going. Yeah. The water's got to come this way.
Because sharks are super weird in terms of their physiology. Like, if they go upside down, they go to sleep, right?
Isn't that the case of sharks? Yeah. Huh?
And it's fucking strange. And they have to keep moving. I don't think they can breathe if they sit still.
Unless they find a spot where there's a nice little draft.
Oh, right.
This video also happened, too. I can't show this one either because this is going to get taken down, but it's a girl getting pulled into the water. She's trying to feed a shark off of a boat, and it grabs her by the finger and just yanks her in.
Oh, Jesus.
And everybody freaks out also. That's quick, fast. But.
What kind of shark is it?
It doesn't say. But also, it's in Australia, so it might be a great white.
Fuck that!
Yeah. I understand.
Why did she think she could feed a shark with her fingers?
Someone probably told her she could, and that was a bad idea.
Yeah, that's the worst. You know, you're probably right. Because, you know, like when you haven't done it before, you're going to ask a reasonable question. Can the shark bite me and pull me in? And then he's going to tell you something in an expert voice like, no, he's not interested in you. You don't look like a seal. He's not going to try to, you know, bite you.
Plus, she's probably hanging out with like 3 or 4 dudes that want to fuck her. They're all drunk.
Yeah. They want to show her a good experience.
Someone's giving her bad advice. She gets half her finger removed. Yeah. Fuck, man.
Then nobody's happy.
Yeah. Do you like going to Russia so much?
I do.
Do you enjoy it up there?
Yeah, I do. I have a good time. Let me see. I like traveling. So this is a cool thing. I've got to travel so much. I've got to see a lot of really cool places, and Russia's one of them. I like all the different places I've been there. St. Petersburg, because Russia's one thing is it's like America, lots of different places wherever you are. Like, you know, this America to some people could seem like a different country in all the different states that you are.
Oh, for sure.
So it's like that. So I got to, I go to Moscow. Moscow's one thing. You know, you get to, there's a lot of history, a lot of nice things to see. St. Petersburg, same thing.
Do you feel safe when you're over there?
Well, I take everything at face value. So that's the way I go through life. Because if I was to try to always read some undercurrents or read what people tell me I'm supposed to experience, I'm never going to do anything. Like a long time ago, my travels, I was going to go do one Butterbean show down in Alabama, and my parents were like, "Man, you're going to Alabama, man. Be safe down there. Don't be doing all that stuff you do. You know, it's going to be different because of, you know, America and our history with racism." And I went down there, and I was, you know, this is what it's a. You mind me tell a story? Yeah, because this is a story. So I went down there, and I was at this show, and some cops come up, and they look like the cops from, you know, in the movies from the South that are supposed to scare you. Mm-hmm. And I took a picture with them, and they're like, and somebody else came to take a picture, and they're like, "Well, look what we started going." "No, man, I'm going to do this song. This is what I'm here to do. I'm going to hang out with people. I'm going to referee fights, and I'm going to, you know, talk to people if they want to talk." So I took a lot of pictures. They were impressed. They're saying that, you know, they've seen other people, you know, tell people know about pictures. And the guy all excited. They're like, hey, we want you to come out and pull people over with us." I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. I have no interest in doing that. You know, I grew up in L.A., you know what I mean? Like, they're like, and they're getting pumped. They're like, imagine, like, "You're getting pulled over by Herb Dean, bitch. Yeah. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do it. And then one guy goes, he goes, well, do something. I mean, we want to make this, do something. Tase me or something, Herb." And so, like, he grabs his taser gun and sticks the taser in my hand.
Jesus.
And I'm
Christ.
Sitting there, and I'm like, "What the fuck?" So I start tasing him, right? I'm tasing this. Gazing this guy, and he's like, he's tasing him. I'm like, so then I after the tasing, his buddy, one of the agents, one of the guys who's worked with me, comes up and tells him that he has some business to talk about with me. I go, "Wait, what do you want to talk about?" He goes, "Man, I could see you were so uncomfortable with what was going on that I just wanted to get." I was like, "Thanks." So I get back to my hotel room, and I was thinking, I was like, "Man, you know, I'm worried about people prejudging and being intolerant. I'm prejudging of these guys because of some history. And these guys are really cool. If I ever get the opportunity to see these guys, I'm going to be, you know, man." And I did. They came, like, right then the phone rings, I swear. And they took me to an after party. And
really?
They're like, yeah, they took it, like, and it was like, the place looks like Roadhouse, and you know what I mean? Like the whole, everything you see, like in a movie, like, you know, some, you know, "Hey, your wife's not going to be happy about that. And I'm going to catch you next week." One of those type of things.
Right.
Yeah. Drove me to the airport with the lights on. Skirt, you know? Yeah. I think I still have the picture of me tasing him. I could show it to you. It was a pretty cool experience. So after that, I was like, man, whatever I think I know about things, I really don't, and so I take things at face value.
Yeah, I've had good times in Alabama. I've had good times in the South.
Mm-hmm.
I think the world is changing too.
Yeah.
I really do. I think there's parts, of, especially this country, where you, almost everywhere you could find cool people.
So I mean, if you know,
oh my God, that is hilarious. That is so ridiculous.
So that's,
you should put this on your Instagram. Can you?
Yeah, I can. They wouldn't mind. I've talked to those guys about it.
Don't you think he's going to get in trouble, though?
No, he's not going to. He said he's fine. He said it'll be all right. I thought he'd get in trouble, so I didn't want to. Yeah, that's why I haven't put it on.
No, you're right.
That's why I never did it. But I've actually talked to him.
Mm-hmm. Look at that picture.
So anyway, this, that yeah, that's a big lesson to me. Like, hey, don't think you know what's going on. You know, take things at face value. Try to be, you know,
So when you go to Russia, you take that attitude. Like, let's just see what the experience. So you have your own experience of what Russia's like.
Yeah, I'm going to have my own experience and not let it be what anyone else is. And also, I had been to Russia before. I went in 95. I used to work for a company that made documentaries, these guys. And I ended up going along to help them out. It was the first time I'd ever left the U.S. It's a big, had a big effect on me. So I,
do you know how to speak it?
No. No, I mean, I can do my instructions in it. I know some words. I mean, I took some time to learn how to use the alphabet so I can get around. You know what I mean?
It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And
like,
so
what
you know,
is that?
Yeah.
That's like Celtic. Yeah. It's like ancient
Cyrillic is what it's called.
Is that what it is? Cyrillic?
Yeah, it's a guy named Cyril. So it's that. Oh, I thought, wow. How's it Cyrillic? Yeah, but it's actually named after a guy who made it.
That's the Russian stuff. What is that Celtic stuff that you know that? You know,
oh yeah, those runes, the runes or something. Yeah,
that's what
it
looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
Like some of the letters in Russia, like why is it that? Why would they do it backwards? Mm-hmm. Like it's the same letter that we have, but it's backwards.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. That's a ya you're talking about.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, the one that looks like a backwards R.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what they. That's a ya.
What does that stand for over there?
Just means ya.
Ya.
And we use it like I too,
oh, look
right?
That. Yeah. Look at that chaos.
So that's how you say I. You say yeah.
Look at their fucking language, man. Look, what's up with that H? What's up with that upside down
H? The H is the
N.
The H is the N.
What?
That's how you use an N.
Oh my God.
So like when you once you get used to reading, so you always see pectopa everywhere you go, right?
What's that little
H? That means
H?
Restaurant.
What's that upside down little H? That looks like a candle holder. Yeah, right there. Oh, that's what's that?
Yeah.
That's an upside down H.
Uh huh.
What happened there?
It looks like a Y.
Somebody took that H minus, and dumped it on its head. But it looks like H, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
if you
yeah.
flipped it upside down, uh-huh. it's like look at the E below that. Like what the fuck is that thing? And so that's a ya that backwards R.
Yeah, yeah.
So you would say you would use it like ya. You'd say that word when you
use it like just how we use I.
Oh,
I, and we use it like I, and then we might use it in another reason too. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It is kind of amazing how different the way we write is to the way Asian folks do. That's
right.
that's the real freak out.
That's, and I think you just have to learn it, right? Each and every one, you have to learn each and every one of those. It looks like it's pretty hard to learn.
Well, especially if it's not completely ingrained in your memory as a child.
Yeah.
Because it up late in life.
I know there's some people who speak Mandarin, but
they
can't
write
it. Yeah,
they can't write it.
Read
it
and write
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. It's alien. Yeah. It looks alien. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that a whole different side of the world writes that way in these little characters.
So I do have some help when I go over there. I'm going to tell you some. I got married a few years ago. My wife is Russian.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, and she speaks Chinese. So when I go to China, it reads and writes Chinese. So when we go to these countries,
it's easier.
Yeah, it's easier to learn. Yeah.
Wow. And English or no?
English, maybe that's how you get along. Yeah, that's how we get along. Some people are good with languages, man.
That's incredible.
Her Spanish is better than mine already. Just got here.
To have Russian, which has its own use of the alphabet, and then Chinese, which is another whole deal, and English. Just, does she have room in her head for anything else?
I know,
it seems like your hard drive would be full.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just
with
those
crazy
three languages, like, fuck.
Three hard languages, right?
Probably the hardest.
I heard the Russian's hard and English. Well, I'm not going to say hard. I've been trying to learn it. It's hard. There's so many ways to say something. They conjugate a lot. I think they a lot more than Spanish.
Really?
And that's what I have problems with. You know, we all get Spanish words. We live in L.A. But conjugating verbs, you know.
Yeah.
But she can do it easy because she's like, oh. Because they conjugate so much more.
Hmm. Yeah, those might be the three hardest language to learn outside of maybe the other Asian languages. Like Japanese is probably pretty difficult to learn.
Yeah, I heard the Vietnamese is tough.
Yeah. And then, you know, you got those languages that you look at, you go, wow, that's crazy. And then you see like ancient Hebrew.
Yeah.
You look at Hebrew language, like the way they write, like what the fuck?
I don't know. I bet Arabic's tough.
Arabic's got to be tough. Yeah. I mean, how many languages are there, if you had a guess?
Yeah.
Hundreds is a lot.
Yeah,
hundreds. Variations and dialects, and depending on like where you are, even in Mexico, there's different. They don't speak the same Spanish down there.
Really?
Yeah. Even Spanish, like you can because, you know, I took a couple of Spanish classes, right? But I can understand people from you know, Spain easier for some reason. And I grew up right here. It's harder for me to understand the way they speak Spanish.
My friend lives in my friend Adam Greentree. He lives in Australia, and he has a lot of experience with like the indigenous people that live there, because he works in a mining company, and they deal with a lot of the Aborigines, and they have the groups of people they call them mobs. That's what they call themselves.
Okay,
like, instead of like a village or a clan, they call themselves a mob. That's what Aborigines use. And they have different languages for different mobs. So, like, there might be hundreds of mobs in this area.
Uh-huh.
And they all have different languages. So you drive. I go, well, how close? He's like, a few miles. I go, a few miles. You know, he would say kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
Say maybe 100 kilometers. Like, so you go 100 kilometers, and you got a totally different language.
Oh, what?
That's all the different languages.
This is a map of all
but the... But maybe they're similar, right?
Areas of the mobs.
I don't believe so. I think they don't know what the fuck each other are saying.
Right, right. Yeah, that's why we can't understand Australians, right?
Right, but if you look at that, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know who's documenting all this stuff and whether or not they've saved these languages. And they have it because it's very likely that like little ones of them will just go, mm-hmm, you know, if these people assimilate to other populations or move out, like you might lose these languages.
Yeah. There's That's so what many I like about going to Russia, too, because there's so many different cultures and so many people. Mm. And I like that. I like people. Like I get to go to Grozny and I've been What's to Grozny? Dagestan. Grozny is in Chechnya.
Yeah. What's
yeah,
that
it's,
like?
It's really, it was a really cool place. I went to, show you some pictures, went and looked around. Well, because it's, for me, what's really cool about it is the energy that people have about developing over there right now, because the place, there was a war there. You know about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a war. And right now, and they're really building up and they're really excited about it. So I think it's just, it's cool to go and see people who are really, see like kind of a group mentality about moving forward, you know?
So what, where exactly is this, and what was their war?
You heard of Chechnya?
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, they had a war with Russia.
Right.
A civil war. So yeah, see, that's what it used to look like. Yeah. Now you got a picture of it now, right? Yeah.
So it's there
it is now.
Of rebuilding.
Yeah. And they rebuilt, they're energetic about it, and there's pride of it, and it's cool. It's cool to be able to go there and get to see it.
That is cool to see something in the middle of a rebirth like that, right?
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
And in that area, a lot of places, yeah, there's a lot of rebirth energy going on.
Oh, wow. So that's what it looked like right after the war? God damn. Wow. That's a crazy image. So you've been doing this now, traveling around the world like this for how many years?
For a long time. I think, let me think, I mean... See, I probably would doing stuff with MMA and traveling for the sport. I started traveling around internationally around 2003 or 4.
Wow.
And then, but I got to travel around the U.S. a lot before that. So that was really cool. Got to go to places like, that I would never go to, Indiana, someplace in Indiana I'd never go, or, you know, and some of these, I've got to go all through them, throughout most of the states in the U.S. Because even before I was doing a lot of the UFC, I had refereed for King of the Cage. So by the time I got to the UFC, I got to referee more fights than anyone I knew.
I think I met you at a King of the Cage.
Yeah, way back in the day, King of the Cage, we met there. Yeah.
That was like 2000 what?
It was probably 2001 or 2000.
That was when they were in Indian reservations,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's probably 2000 because they started there in 2000. You were there at the early ones, right?
Yeah.
And when they first started. Eddie was working for them.
Yeah, and my friend Bud Brutzman was one
of
the owners.
Bud, yeah. Yeah, Bud, man, Bud didn't, like, Terry decided to let me referee. Bud was hard on me at first.
Really?
Bud was rough on me. But then he started to like me. Bud was rough on me in the beginning.
He didn't want you to referee at first?
Yeah. Well, Larry was a referee. That's how I started refereeing. Larry was a referee, and I trained with Larry. And everybody liked Larry as a referee. He's a really, Larry's a really good guy, and he did a lot to, he went and, when he started doing it, he went and did a little research and talk to people from the commission from doing boxing and kickboxing. And, so he put inspectors in place and things like that. And that was my job at first. I would go out there, we'd bring all our guys out, and I would like kind of manage the inspecting team. And then I think they ended up working me too hard one show. And I was like, man, I came and volunteered my time. I want to be able to see at least a fight or two. And I just come to work for you. And Terry was like, no, I'll make it up to you. And I wanted to try a referee. I was like, I'll try a referee fight. He goes, okay, do that. And then I remember the first time I was like, man, I think when I was like, wow, I really signed up for something here. You know what I mean? Mm. So, yeah, it was. But yeah, that's kind of how that happened.
When did how many fights did you have?
I've had, I think, 5.
Yeah. And when did you decide? Was it because of refereeing that they decided that it was like a conflict of interest for you to continue your career?
Yeah, well, see, I was never like a real serious competitor. It's like, I like to train. I like to do that. And then every now and then, I want something to train for. You know what I mean? And so give me something to motivate me. Or it'd be fun to do it, you know?
Right.
And what happened is someone told me that it was a conflict of interest and that I needed to pick one or the other. And no one's going to miss me as a fighter. So, so you know, that's kind of how that worked out.
Well, you're definitely one of the best in the world, man. I get happy when you're refereeing a fight. Because I know that it's going to be handled. I agree with you on virtually every single time you and I have had a discussion about what should or shouldn't be done. The one thing that drives me crazy about referees, and not you, but some referees, is breaks and stand-ups that don't necessarily need to happen. When guys are working towards something and you can see there's like a battle, the guy's trying to defend, the guy's trying to get out of half guard, get in the mount, and then you'll see a referee come over and just separate it because the crowd's booing or because they don't understand what's happening, how much of a struggle it is.
Right.
Especially clinch work.
Exactly.
When guys get a guy up against the cage, they're working for something. They might stall each other out, but eventually someone might break down.
Right.
I mean, and this is how a guy like Nurmagomedov wins fights against elite guys. This is how Randy Couture won a lot of fights. It's a legitimate tactic. Just because it doesn't look fun for you. You know, like a guy beating a guy up against the cage, just short elbows, knees to the thighs, you might think that that's not enough. But that's a good way to wear a dude out. And you keep doing that until eventually you break him.
Yeah, especially when you're someone like Stipe.
Yeah.
I think I think for me it's helpful as I do my pre-fight instructions, you know. And so I tell the fighters what I expect and what to expect from me, you know what I mean? So I don't want to – I want to interfere as little as possible.
Yeah, I know
so,
you do.
And so that's my goal. And so, I give them instructions. If I tell them, you know, hey, work, right. What I expect, and, you know, I expect you to do something to I'm looking for big shots or advance your position. And then they'll ask me, like, well, how long will you leave something stale? I go, well, what is stale? If they're both guys relaxed, that's stale. But like you're talking about, even up against the fence in a clinch, especially, that's where a lot of things are really getting decided.
Yes.
And so we have to really see that play out, you know, especially a lot of the guys are, you know, if they're striking at each other, maybe in some of the other weight classes, you know, they don't have that one punch always. Some of the guys do, but not everyone does. And that's where things are going to get sighted in that clinch. And if there's a tension there, we need to see where that's going to go and let it, you know, work itself out.
I'm so glad you said that. That's the perfect way to say it. And that's absolutely, I 100% agree. And there's moments where it changes the course of the fight where it's really unfortunate. You didn't referee Kamaru Usman and Damian Maia, did you?
I don't think so. No.
Whoever did that one, we don't even have to pull it up, but there was a moment in the first round when Damian Maia got a hold of Kamaru and was trying to take his back, standing. And he had like one hook in and a clinch, and he was hanging on to him, and the referee decided not enough was taking place. They separated him. I'm like, oh, you can't do that. It's so hard to get a hold of
Usman. Well, I hope it wasn't me who did that. God, man. Damian Maia about to get you back? Whoa. Yeah. And say, no, that's not going anywhere.
Matt Serra went crazy. You know, he has that that podcast he does with Jim Norton. And he's like, you just don't do that to the guy. Like, he's got a hold of him. Like, he might take his back here. Like, and... You know, you saw what he did with Lyman Good when he takes your back. And Lyman Good's a beast. But when Damian Maia gets a hold, especially early in the round, he's fresh and he's got his back already.
And he has a lot of interesting takedowns from there, too. While he's like, he goes back and forth with halfway taking your back. And then when you're defending the takedown, he starts taking your back. And then when you go back, then he's back working on that. So, no, he works at a real interesting pace there, you know?
Well, it's stunning to watch him go through guys. Like, when he went through Rick Story, I was like, Jesus Christ. Like, Rick Story's a powerful wrestler.
Yeah.
And when he takes his back and he gets him in that neck crank and you see the blood squirting out of his nose, you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, this is a heavy fucking squeeze this guy has. And then he did it to Carlos Condit. Who else has he done to? He's done to a lot of guys. He gets a hold of you. He just squeezes the life out of you.
And when he gets on top, he seems so heavy.
Neil Magny, when he ran through Neil Magny, I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just such high-level jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, when he's on top, he's just
No air, just smushes you.
Mm-hmm.
It's I'm such a sucker for a specialist, whether it's a style bender specialist or a striking specialist or a Damian Maia specialist. I love watching the guys that are like at the tip of the ability in whatever their discipline is.
And style bender, man, he seems to be getting better every time.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Well, for him, it was just avoiding takedowns. Mm-hmm. Like, he was so high level as a kickboxer. Mm-hmm. He's so clever. Like, he's like, in my opinion, probably the very best in the sport at setting traps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He'll like, gauge you, see what you're doing, then he'll switch stances.
He's getting some information.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not random. And I like the way he deals with the takedowns. I mean, he knows where he's safe and where he's not. You don't see that he's panicking. He's like, yeah, it's got a minute. Let this cook a minute. But
yeah.
I seen what this attempt looks like. I see what this one looks like. I'm walking it through. All right, now my party's going to start.
Yeah.
Here's a guy. I talked to one of his guys he trains with. I was refereeing some fights in China. And it's one of the guys he trains with in New Zealand. And this guy was telling me so much and showing me different things about angles they do and things that they set up in their striking that I never knew or thought about. And this was before I saw him start fighting in UFC.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was aware of him, but he hadn't been in the UFC yet. And, man, these guys are really smart. The techniques, like, this sport is growing so much, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, when you're seeing like really high level, super technical strikers like him, like who's a world class. I mean, as good, he easily could be world champion in many organizations as a kickboxer. Mm-hmm. To see him now in the UFC and see guys having to deal with that, it's like, oh, okay. This, like, the Anderson fight's a great example. We know how great Anderson is.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He still looked pretty good against Stylebender, but you could see why Stylebender was special in that fight. Yeah. Did he add like another level of trickery?
Yeah. And I mean, and stuff John Jones is doing.
Yeah.
Well, so you can't call him a specialist because, man, he does so many different styles, everything. Right? It's really like a kung fu movie, right? Where you change styles.
Yeah.
And then they do something. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, John's such a good kicker too. I mean, that's interesting that he started out as a wrestler. Because, like, how much of his style now is kicking you? It's a giant part of his game, his utilization of those long-ass legs.
Right. And it's interesting, like, how much time he looks like he's getting information a lot, right?
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, then when he shifts gears, it's like, okay, I've gotten a lot of information. And here's what I'm going to do with it.
Yeah. He's going to fight Thiago Santos, right?
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah. That guy goes for broke.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he goes for broke. It's interesting to watch him fight because you want to talk about like a wild, reckless dude. Like, Santos is dangerous. I mean, John Jones should and probably will be a heavy favorite.
Yeah.
But Santos, he throws some haymakers.
No, it's going to be a great fight to watch.
Yeah, that guy's going to go out on a shield.
No, he puts pressure. I think the interesting thing about for me, what's interesting when I watch any of the heavier guys fight is like, you know, they really have to understand where they're safe and where they're not.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that John does really good.
Yeah.
How to be in the pocket and the places where he's safe and, where, you know, knowing where, yeah.
He's the best ever at utilizing his reach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one's ever been better at controlling reach and then never letting a guy reset. When guys try to reset, bam, he kicks him. Bam, he kicks him again. Bam, he kicks him again. He's like, he knows when you're trying to get comfortable, when you're trying to settle in, and that's when he kicks you. Like, it's almost like he senses it and he just starts battering you. Like, he sees, like, no breaks, no breaks, no breaks, no breaks. Like, the
Speaking of no breaks, what about, Max Holloway?
Oh, dude, he's the king of no breaks. King of no breaks, Max Holloway. There's no breaks.
Oh,
he just pours it on you. He just keeps coming.
Yeah.
Keeps coming. What happened? He pours it on you. He keeps coming, and his fucking combinations. Several high-profile fighters confirmed for UFC 239, including Michael Chiesa versus Diego Sanchez.
There's now four fights for
shit.
This. There's one.
Michael Chiesa, pack a lunch, bro.
Ngannou
versus Dos Santos.
Oh.
Sanchez, that's a great one. So that's Vegas.
Yeah, that's the card you guys are talking about.
July 6th.
Yeah, oh.
Yeah. That's good.
Jan Blachowicz versus Luke Rockhold. That's a great fight, too. Rockhold's first fight at light heavyweight in the UFC.
How'd you learn how to say that?
Blachowicz? I think I listened to someone else say it, and I just repeated the noise. <All right>. I had the hardest time with Zabit. It's Abit Magomed Sharipov.
That's a hard one.
That dude, whew, he's nasty. He's fun to watch.
He's fun to watch.
That dude does some nasty shit in there. So technical. So crisp. You know? And again, long range.
Yeah.
You know? But can take it too, man. I mean, he ate some bombs from Jeremy fucking Stevens, who's one of the biggest bomb throwers in the division.
Yeah.
Jeremy has some fucking weapons.
I remember when that fight was on, I was like, man, I couldn't wait to watch that.
Yeah, that was a great fight. It's a close fight, too. Close fight. I mean, I think the decision went to Zabit, and Jeremy disputed it a little bit, but man, that was a close fight. Very good fight, but I think the decision was correct. Mm-hmm. But Zabit is, he's an interesting style, right? Really good grappling, crazy trips. A lot of crazy, real, old-school traditional martial arts kicks, throws wheel kicks and 360 roundhouse kicks and shit.
Right.
You know?
Real, a lot of grace, a lot of balance there.
Yeah, there's so much talent now. I can't remember a time where there was so many elite high-level fighters that were, like, so exciting to watch. There's so many good guys. That's, like, really good guys. People are slipping through.
And this sport is growing so much and growing all over the world. Some of these, like, that's one of the cool things about the travels. You get to go see, and some of these athletes in other parts of the world have a huge following, and no one's ever heard of them here. This is one guy. Amiri Akbari, he has, I think, like almost 1 million followers on Instagram.
Really?
Yeah.
No shit. He's a UFC guy?
No. That's what I'm saying. He's a guy who's never fought in the UFC.
Where does he fight?
He fights in ACA.
No kidding. This is the Russian organization?
Yeah.
What's it called?
ACA.
Yeah, what does it mean? What does it stand for?
Absolute Championship Akhmat.
Akhmat. Mm-hmm. What does Akhmat mean? There he is. 1.6 million. But look how handsome he is. Yeah. Damn.
I refereed a fight in Azerbaijan where he was at.
Is he a heavyweight?
Yeah.
How much does he weigh?
Yeah, he's a big heavyweight.
Do you think he passes a piss test?
You know, I'm not living in the man's pocket, so I don't know if anyone can pass a piss test. I really don't know. That's not something I'm not an expert on that. I leave that to you, man. I like that
expression. I think he likes wrestling.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of fighters like wrestling right now. They're seeing Ronda Rousey make that cha-ching.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, I could do that.
Do you watch pro wrestling?
I watch it occasionally when Tony Hinchcliffe makes me. Mm-hmm. Why, do you watch it?
Nah.
No. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think you would. I don't get it either. I'm not 14. I loved it.
No, when I was a kid, I liked it when I was six. I liked it a lot. And don't get me wrong, I don't respect what they're doing. I used to work out at a Noki dojo, and I did some pro wrestling workouts with them just to see what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And they're taking those bumps and some of the stuff they would do off the, like, there's no way I would be doing that with my body. So all respect to it. Yeah. But it's just that this doesn't care to me.
I feel exactly the same way. They should be respected as being incredibly tough. That's talented. A very difficult job. Yeah. Athletic, talented. The guys that are really good at it that make it look like, you know, like art.
Yeah, I liked Jimmy Superfly Snuka when I was a kid. Yeah.
I loved that guy.
Yeah.
Bob Backlund, remember him?
I don't remember who.
Remember the Iron Sheik, of course.
Oh, yeah, of course I remember Iron Sheik. Yeah, Iron Sheik.
Yeah, there was some fun times. But yeah, I prefer real things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get it. I get the appeal, you know. But I it's like once you watch really good fights, it's hard. It's hard to give a shit about fake fights.
Yeah, and I don't get it. I didn't get it. But you know what? Some people love it. And you know, that's their thing, you know. Some people know every bit of it, every stick, and, you know, I don't know. But I think there's probably, you know, who knows, it might catch me. Because, you know, I'm always trying to get hip to stuff. So if there's something I don't enjoy, I like to do it with somebody who enjoys it so I can kind of watch them and kind of learn how to enjoy it. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like, what's the part that you like about this? You know what I mean? Or, like, I didn't listen to a lot of country music, but then I used to work with Gladiator Challenge a lot. And Ted Williams was like, you don't like country music. So he gave me country music education. What's the matter with you don't like, Tom? You can say this ain't good music. And then I was like, okay, hey, no, I got you.
What, so what stuff country. Did you get into?
I started grabbing it. I like the old stuff. I like
what kind?
I like Murrow. I like Chris Christopherson, Sunday Morning Coming Down.
Yeah.
And I like your boy. Your boy was on there.
Sturgill?
Yeah, Sturgill. I like Sturgill. Sturgill Simpson. That shit is deep right there.
He's a bad motherfucker.
Yeah. I seen Jesus play with.
Yeah, no, he's legit. Yeah. He's legit.
That song is a well-written song, man.
He's a trip of a story, man. He was like working regular jobs, working on a railroad, and mm-hmm. his wife told him, you could make a living doing music. She's like, you know, you don't suck at this.
Mm-hmm.
So she told him to go for it. And now he's like one of the biggest music artists in the world.
Right, right.
It's crazy. And it didn't take long either, man.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. That Turtles All the Way Down, like that's a really cool song.
First time I met him, like almost immediately after meeting him, we got high as fuck and did a podcast. I mean, we were barbecued. There's been a couple of times where, you know, he called me up after the podcast was over. He was like, man, I didn't even know what the fuck we were talking about for the first 20 minutes because we were so high. Because if you live in Nashville, like he lives in the Nashville area,
mm-hmm.
you go out there and get the weed. They have pretty good weed. It's okay. But it's not California weed. Like, California weed is preposterous.
Right, right.
If you're not used to that stuff, you smoke that shit and try to be on air, like all of a sudden, now you're on a podcast, you're on air, and we're talking about like...
Yeah, I don't think I could keep up. I would like... Can you keep up with Joey?
No.
I went on his podcast, man, and he packed enough, I think, to get a village high. He put it in this bowl, it was like, and just tore it up. Emptied it out, did it again, and then ate a gummy bear and was like, all right. started to put on Pink Floyd.
He's the real deal, man.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he's free. Joey Diaz is free.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not that free, man. I wish I could be. I have respect for it. Just be, like you said, that freeness.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people are free.
Yeah.
But I'm not as free. Like, I think... Your boys, a lot of your people seem kind of free.
Like who?
I think Eddie Bravo seems free. Oh, he's a free thinker, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He in all good free. Ways and, yeah. and others. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Eddie's, that's why his jiu-jitsu is so creative.
Yeah.
Because he's so open to ideas, you know? He's also like, he doesn't like losing. So he's like, oh, no, I'm going to figure out how to win. I'm going to figure out how to beat this. So mm-hmm. he'll look at a position and he'll have some weird unorthodox take on how to get to a better spot or how to control the position mm-hmm. better or how to finish from there. And like you'll see, like, damn, like his brain just works weird.
Yeah, just every, you know, if you have a conversation with him about stuff, you'll learn a lot just from every time. Like, okay, I know you're going to take away something from it.
Dude, I can't do one of the bits that he's doing. But he's doing stand-up now, and some of his shit is really fucking funny, man. He made me laugh really hard last night.
Really?
I would have to do the bit. I would have to tell you the bit to show you. Like,
I've been seeing he does stand-up. Yeah, I've seen you. So I should go see it.
He's getting funny, man. He's getting really funny. He's getting more and more comfortable doing it. He was mm-hmm. always funny.
Yeah.
I mean, he always used to make me laugh. But he tried it way back in the day. He tried stand-up many, many, many moons ago. Like fucking 2003 or 2004 or something like that. He tried mm-hmm. it. It just wasn't for him. He was too busy with other stuff. He was going to try it and then get good at it. But he bombed a few times. He's like, fuck this. And then he tried it again. I want to say like 4 years ago. Was it about that? 3 years ago? 4 years ago? Somewhere in that range. And he's been doing it steady since. He's actually pretty funny, man. Like made me laugh, like really loud.
Yeah, because I've seen on social media that you guys have some shows where like he's on there, you're on it, a bunch of you.
Yeah, that's a lot of Sam Tripoli shows. Yeah, a lot mm-hmm. of Sam shows. He does a podcast, Tinfoil Hat Podcast with right. Sam.
Uh-huh.
And we're all real good friends. And Sam is also a conspiracy nut, so they get together and talk about the Illuminati and shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have friends like that, yeah.
He's
my friends like that, deep.
Yeah. I go back and forth with conspiracies. I have a love-hate relationship with conspiracies. I love some of them. Some of them are fascinating. Some of them are like, okay, what the fuck happened there? You know? But and then some of them I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. I mean, when I was younger, I used to think about it. But then I think when I had a kid, When you don't have enough time for that.
Got no time for nonsense. time becomes very precious.
And this becomes food how?
Exactly. Not over here worrying about the fucking Illuminati. I don't even know what that means. What's the Illuminati?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm busy. I gotta go. But I get how people get sucked into that rabbit hole. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. No, I could see it.
I went into a rabbit hole the other day, but with aliens. I watched three alien documentaries in a row. I watched this one on Bob Lazar, who was a guy who claims that he worked at Area 51. It's very compelling, very interesting.
Is that the top one? That's the one you would suggest?
Yes. That's the one I would suggest. It's called Area 51. You have Bob Lazar, Area 51, and Flying Saucers, I think it's called. It's on iTunes.
I'm going to write it down.
It's fucking good.
Take notes.
Because there's some things that this guy knew that it's almost certain that he worked where he said he worked. That he worked at Area 51. The question becomes, he told all the truth about all these things that have since been proven to be true. Weird.
So he gave first cut at those truths, right?
Yeah. Well, okay, he did it a long time ago, too. He came out about this like 30 years ago. There was Nevada television.
I've heard about this. Yeah.
Bob Lazar. He was worried about his life. Here's what happened. Apparently, the guy was working in this area doing research for whatever the government wanted him to do at Area 51. What he did there, who knows? He gets fired from this job and then takes his friends to this viewing position in the mountains where they can see them flying saucers. He was telling them, they fly them out of this base. I'm going to bring you guys. We're going to watch it. They videotaped this on old school VHS tape. You can see these flying saucers flying around Area 51. And he says these are not being piloted by aliens. These are being piloted by human beings. But that these are real devices. These things are real. It's a real vehicle. And they got this real vehicle from some other civilization from somewhere in space. And they had 9 of them. It sounds like total horseshit when you hear it. But then you watch the video. And so the questions come like, well, how did he know that they were going to be flying these things up there? How did he know they were going to do them on Wednesdays? How did he know where to be and where he could see it? Uh-huh. How did he know? How did he know about the biometric data? How did he know about element 115? He was talking about this element, this man-made element, that it's a real element that they've now identified. But when he was talking about it in 1980, no one knew what the fuck he was talking about, or 1984 or whatever it was when he first got interviewed about this. So when this guy is bringing this stuff up today and people are looking back at all the different things that he said that have since been proven to be true, especially the existence of Area 51, the government had to, at some point in time in the 90s, they had to say that they owned the base and say that it did in fact exist, so that they could broaden the top secret area, or the a do not enter zone, where they'll pull you over and arrest you if you get past a certain spot. They wanted to broaden that area so people couldn't be watching their crafts fly around like Bob Lazar was. And when they did that, when they expanded the territory, that's when they had to actually admit that the base was real. So he was proven to be correct on so many different things that he said, like explain how they get him out there, explain what the research was, and he said that they have these things that run on they manipulate gravity in some way, and they're very small because these aliens are very small little creatures, like a child, like a 8-10-year-old child.
Huh.
It makes you go, what the fuck, man?
Like, and so he talked about he saw them. He knew how they operated. Wow.
The things that he knows that are true, that turned out to be true, that how could he have known them if he didn't work at Area 51 are the most compelling aspects of it. And the fact that Area 51 was, at one point in time, by the government's take, it didn't exist. And then it was like a legend. And this was when he was talking about it. And so watching this documentary and seeing this guy 30 years later still basically saying exactly the same thing, but with a bunch of things have been proven since.
Yeah, that is intense.
It's a trip, man. I mean, if the government really did at one point in time have some craft that it got from another planet, what the fuck, man? But the thing is, like, how would we take that? How do you think people would take that if they found out? How do you think they'd handle that? If they really knew there was something that was so sophisticated that it could visit us from another planet, it could be here in minutes, land in the White House lawn, do whatever the fuck it wanted to. You couldn't even shoot it with bullets.
How would people take that? I think that people would just keep going on, like with every other scare.
You think so?
Yeah, I think, okay, there's there could be a meteor that's supposed to hit us, right?
Right.
I mean, how would people take it? I mean, that's what they're saying. They're saying it could happen.
I think it would be a fuck fest in the streets.
Yeah, but they say it could happen. I mean, right. You know.
If you saw one coming.
Yeah, but no, I'm saying not if you saw one coming, because you don't see the alien coming. If people realize, yeah, these guys could show up, right? I don't know. I remember the conspiracy that, remember when there would be like these booklets of like Xerox stuff going on, like the one about AIDS and stuff like that?
Uh-huh.
Remember that one? Yeah, that one had me going for a while.
The AIDS conspiracy? The AIDS
Dr. Strecker's memorandum?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people used to hand those out, right?
Yeah.
They were trying to tell people that AIDS was a hoax.
Not a hoax, that it was like all this stuff. Remember,
that it was a government conspiracy. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that had me way out for a while.
Yeah.
I remember I was making copies and passing along. That blew my mind.
Well, there was one doctor at one point in time that was trying to say that HIV does not cause AIDS. And we had him on way back in the day, early on. What was that guy's name? Duesberg. Dr. Peter Duesberg. Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. I just remembered it. He is a professor at the University of California, Berkeley, I believe. I think he's a biologist.
Mm-hmm.
And his take was that HIV does not cause AIDS. That what causes AIDS is a compromised immune system, and that HIV is actually a weak virus, and it shows up in the immune systems of people that are already compromised. That's why you're finding it in these people, that it's not the cause of their immune system being compromised. It's a symptom of it. And that what these people are really dying from is their whole system being fucked up by drugs. That either they're taking AZT, which destroys their body. You know, it was a cancer medication, like a chemotherapy that was so powerful, it was killing people quicker than the cancer was. And then they switched it over to using it with people that had AIDS. Because in the early days, they would call AIDS the gay cancer.
Right.
There was all these different, like they were trying to figure out what it was and what it did. And early on, this guy was saying this, and we had him on the podcast, and people got so mad. They were so mad, giving this guy a platform to spread his propaganda and his lies. And I was like, wow. But he is a professor, right? He has done like legitimate cancer research. He's, you know, I mean, don't you want to listen to him? And I wanted to get someone on to debate him, but nobody wanted to debate him. It was like trying to get someone to debate a Holocaust denier. Like nobody wants to give them the platform. Nobody wants to talk to them, which I understand. But those kinds of, I mean, it's very highly unlikely that all these doctors are incorrect and are hiding the fact that HIV, you know, and then now the fact that they've got these HIV medications that basically they can take people and make them HIV negative now, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't they have like a couple people have tested HIV negative after new medications? Yeah, I don't know. I'm too stupid. Too stupid to understand what's really going on.
Yeah, that's for me. I know that I'm not. Like when I watch some of those things, you know, some of them they'll like lead off with these statements, and we all know, and we know this. I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
there's too much to know.
Yeah,
yeah. How did we get in the subject of AIDS?
I don't know. We're talking about conspiracy theories.
Oh yeah,
and that was the one when it was out back in what 89 or something, 88, when those little pamphlets were going around.
Yeah,
I was like, yeah.
Well, marijuana and conspiracies go together like cookies and milk.
Yeah.
Right. There's nothing like weed that starts your gears turning, and you start thinking. That's why a lot of people start thinking conspiracies are against them too. Right. You get high and then you start thinking that the world's closing in on you.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's watching you. Surveillance.
But you probably don't feel like that when you get high.
No, I'm okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do sometimes. I kind of like it, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know why I like it? Because it ends. And when it ends, you feel great. It's almost like a brutal brain workout. Mm-hmm. Like you go digging deep into your psyche and find out all the things you're scared of.
Right. Yeah. No, it's like it's work.
Yeah.
It's work.
Yeah,
you've done a little work. You're like taking a look at yourself. Oh, you know, I never thought about me from that angle before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like to do it on
I better
planes.
Clean up my. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Clean up your shit. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially if I think if you're in a high pressure job and you're very busy, like I am, I think those little insights are very important because you could get caught up in your own bullshit and what you're trying to do and not think of the impact you're having on the people that are around you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then that marijuana goes. Hey.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And you impact a lot of people.
Too many people.
Especially with, you know, like, you know, because I have things where, like, my philosophy might change or a little thing. And you're talking to a lot of people and like, oh, I don't know if I feel like that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. You could switch, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You could definitely switch your opinions.
I do. I switch my opinions.
I do too.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that either. Yeah. I think everybody should be more flexible with their opinion. I mean, obviously, there's opinions like rape is bad. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, don't murder people. Right. Yeah. Don't steal. Obviously, those things, normal stuff that everybody agrees on. Mm-hmm. But then you get to a certain point and I think we get real married to the idea of our opinions being right, and we mm-hmm. get real married to the idea of winning an argument with our opinions. Mm-hmm. I think that's when things get kind of squirrely, because then you start trying to calculate an argument to make your position sound better rather than considering your position mm-hmm. for what it really is.
Yeah, and then also being – just trying – yeah, always trying to figure out and learn a little something, take something away from it. Not to be a knee-jerk. That's the thing. You don't want to be a knee-jerk, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, one I went real back and forth on pretty recently is universal basic income.
Mm, I see this guy, universal
basic Yang.
Yeah, Andrew Yang.
Yeah.
Uh-huh,
yeah. Mm-hmm. He's running for president on that platform. That's part of his platform.
Right, right.
And I had him on the podcast. Really enjoyed talking to him. Really, really smart guy. Very mm-hmm. cool guy. But when I'm talking to him and I'm thinking about it, I'm like, boy, I don't even know if that's enough. Like what they're doing, the idea behind it, like the idea is that automation is going to take all these jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Automated cars going to stop. I mean, it's going to like wipe out a shitload of jobs apparently. And the idea is that if we don't have some form of universal basic income, there's going to be chaos. But having just some amount of money so that people have their needs taken care of. You always have food. You always have shelter. This you're taken care of. Now, go pursue your happiness. The real problem with that, though, was who was it that we had the other day where we were talking about meaning, about people wanting – was it Nick Christakis? Is that who it was?
People like fight? People need meaning for their life.
Who was that?
It might be him. I don't recall it.
I don't think it was. I think it was someone else. Was it Ben Shapiro? No, I don't think it was. But anyway, whoever it was that we were talking about it, we were saying that does that give people a sense of meaning, though? Because people like you, for instance, you know your responsibility as a referee. You know how significant it is. You know you're one of the best in the world. When you're refereeing a high-level championship bout, when the fighters find out that Herb Dean's the referee, they get excited. They go, good, one less thing I have to think about. It's like you're putting so much of who you are into that job. Do we know?
Yeah.
I'm looking for a piece of it. I don't know yet. Sorry.
No worries. But, I mean, look, that's gigantic, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's I know for you that's an enormous. Oh, yeah. You take that very seriously. Yeah?
Kevin Hart, maybe? Were you guys talking about that?
Was it? No, I don't think so. Anyway, you have meaning, you know, in what you do. If you just got money to lay around and someone said, well, just go pursue your goals. Like, okay, but I think what people really like to do when they're really happy is make a living doing something that has meaning.
To them.
I don't know if it would smooth things out if you just gave people money.
Yeah, I don't know how that would work. I saw what he's talking about, but I'm not smart enough for that one to know how that's going to work.
But he seemed to think that there was a lot of ancillary benefits, like things like lowered crime rates, lowered, you know, that you would have lowered instances of disease, lowered instances of people that were injured doing certain things. Like you, if you had money and you made sure that people had a certain amount of money, it actually might cost the public less money.
I could see where he would come from with that, because I think there's something, because there's a lot of people, or probably you've met a lot of people who say that money isn't everything and there's these things that mean this, but it's only once you get enough money where you can step off the little
hamster wheel
for a second to like start thinking about these other things.
Money's overwhelming, man.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't have it, it's over. I remember when I first got a development deal when I was doing stand-up and I got a big check and I just immediately felt like literally a weight was lifted off my back. Just a weight. Like I had a weight vest on. I took it off. Whew.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now I don't have to worry about food or rent or gas or anything for, like, at least a year.
Right, right,
and
right.
I was like, I don't have to think about it. And then I remember, like, thinking, God, I feel so free. It feels so different because most people's lives who are in debt, most of the time, they have this constant fog of pressure.
No, yeah, yeah.
It's around them about those bills, those goddamn bills. They're everywhere.
It's always there. It's creeping on you.
And then you get credit cards and you max those motherfuckers out.
And then
you're
still trying to live these dreams that people are giving to you, that you're supposed to have these, like, you know, these symbols, these status. You know, people are trying to go, like, and it's really, and that's even weird because, you know, I'm not really into that stuff. But then again, I'm on television, so I guess I can afford not to be. I don't know. You know what I mean? Maybe that's why I like to think I'm deep. Yeah, no, I don't need a Mercedes, man. I'm just, you know, I'm just driving, you know, just driving my car, my 2005. You know, that's, I just need to get from point A to point B. But, you know, maybe that's why. I don't know.
I don't know, man. You said you have a 74 Bronco, too, so you must appreciate cool shit.
I did. See, that's what I'm saying. But that's the thing. I was about to get rid of it, my friend said, because I was like, man, it doesn't mean what it used to mean to me. But I do appreciate it. And now I'm like, my friend's like, hey, we're going to hook this thing up.
Ah.
So I was like, all right, I sent it to him. He says, I'm going to give you a deal. We're going to get it all hooked up, right? And da-da. But it does, I will admit that, like, before it meant a lot more to me than it does now.
Kevin Hart came over here with a Bronco the other day.
I saw his Bronco.
Red one?
His is better than mine. Dude. Yours is too.
His is dope. His makes me realize how cool the convertibles are when they're done as convertibles.
Right.
Like, he's just driving around with no top on. I'm like, oh, that's so nice.
That's how I'm doing mine. Because I had gotten mine as a convertible, and I went and I got a top because I wanted to do a hard top on it.
Look at that.
But if you're taking it on and off, yeah.
That is a nasty Bronco. Yeah. You know, he has his own car company that does this shit. Mm. He does this shit with his own company. Mm. He's got like 100 businesses. Dude, I never met anybody as motivational or motivated as Kevin Hart.
No, I follow him on social media, and that man is, yeah, and I saw what he was talking about, you know, talking to you about too. Yeah, yeah, he's very motivated. Yeah,
he's the most authentically positive person I think I've ever met. And look at that, he's got an Eleanor Mustang. That's a fucking beast, man. They made that at his place too. So he has his own fucking car place that makes him cars. Look at that. I mean, the dude's off the charts. But more importantly, like his outlook. Like his healthy, positive outlook and the way, you know, he just goes through life. It's very inspirational. Just always, but it's very positive, uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's all just trying to help people in all these different facets of life, help people with financial advice, help people with motivation, help people to get the bullshit out of their life, get the clutter out of their life.
Yeah, no, I even like when I first started really liking him is when he was doing that thing where he was meeting up with people to run. Like, when he'd be at, he'd be like, man, I was like, man, I like that. I was going to like that as much as I travel. And I used to like to run, you know.
Well, you could always do that. Other people do that. My friend Cameron Haynes does that all the time. He'll invite people to run with him places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My thing with the yoga is I've been deciding to do it when I'm on the road. So that's been cool is I got to do it in
You going to Atlanta this weekend?
No.
What?
No, 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 no.
What?
Didn't get invited.
What the fuck? There's two. Not one. Two world championship fights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Damn, you didn't get invited to Atlanta? Yeah. Are they going to use Atlanta guys?
I'm not sure who they're going to use. But there's a good Atlanta guy.
Oh,
the one who's a referee, Blake Grice?
Blake Grice, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's a good guy.
Isn't that Matt Grice's brother?
Is he? I didn't know that.
I think one of the referees.
Does he use what's his name? Who's old school? Sometimes they use what's his name. Remember that fighter? He used to have the black dude with the like a patch of gray here, but that so like a streak. It makes his hair look real cool. What's his name? Is he's a real good fighter. His son fights MMA now. He came from a kickboxing background. I don't know why I'm drawing a blank on his
name.
Damn,
you're drawing a blank.
This is embarrassing because it's embarrassing because he's going to be mad at me like you don't know me. I know him.
Oh, I hate that. Feeling old happens. Right now. All right. That's the weed. Hanging out with Joey Diaz will fuck your head up for a couple months. When was the last time you did Joey's podcast?
No, it was probably a couple of years ago.
Oh, okay.
But so it was fun. I'm safe. I'm recovered. I'm safe.
Yeah, dude, he'll change your life over in that weird room. He gives people those stars of death.
I know,
250 milligrams of THC. That's crazy.
250 milligrams?
Yeah, that's crazy. That is a crazy amount.
Yeah.
That's not right.
No, it's not that. Oh, I'm still trying to think of this guy's name.
Yeah, I know you are. I'm trying to jostle your memory in some way.
We'll come back to it.
We'll come back to it. Yeah, there's a lot of guys who are former fighters that I think Frank Trigg's doing referee work now, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Frank Trigg's really good.
I would like more guys to do that, and I would love to have more former fighters be judges.
Mm-hmm. You know who I saw who was really good, who came and took my course, is Chris Lieben.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Good referee?
Well, he's been doing stuff in camo, and he's coming along, and he's doing it. Yeah, I think.
He just won in a bare-knuckle boxing
fight. I saw some clips of it. It looked good.
Yeah, it's good for him, too. Mm-hmm. Like, with his style, his crazy style, that's actually a great move for him.
Right.
You know? But he retired from fighting because he didn't want to fight anymore. I mean, but I guess a little bit of time off, and he's like, fuck it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was two organizations. There used to be a different bare knuckle boxing, but they went under. And when they went under, they owe him like $90,000.
Yeah, they cheated him. They owe him.
Yeah,
that's rough. And his recourse is just let people know. Yeah, these guys owe me money.
Did you see the clip that Crooklyn from Crooklyn on Twitter put up of the owner of bare knuckle boxing saying that a fighter didn't fight hard enough?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. And he was proud of it. He's like, this is the way we do it.
See if you can find her tweet.
Yeah, this is the way we do it. This is what you can expect.
Yeah. Like, that was ridiculous. Uh-huh. You're just going to dock a guy's pay?
Yeah.
So he took 50% of his money?
Because it didn't meet his standards.
Yeah, I just...
I wonder when he said, did the crowd cheer? That's something that to get the crowd.
I think so. I hope not. I'd hate to see that.
Something the crowd could cheer for.
Yeah. Your attention to the president of the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. Look at his. Mr. David Feldman.
He looks like he's on coke. Look at him. Look at his evil look in his face.
Hey, Bill, are you guys having fun tonight? Make some noise. Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship is a brand new sport and a brand new company, and we're here for action. And we want action, and we demand action from the fighters.
Demands.
We didn't get action in that last fight because Rusty Crowder wanted to run. Therefore, he's given half his purse to Reggie Barnett. Make some noise, Biloxi. This is how we do it at Bare Knuckle. You fight or you don't get paid.
That's not good. It's not good that he thinks the Zombie Prophet wrote this can't be legal. Let's see what Steffi Hayes wrote. Crooklyn MMA.
I wonder how that works. That's like, okay, maybe it's in the contract.
She, like, she wrote, "What the actual fuck is this hillbilly bullshit?" yeah, I concur. What in the actual fuck is that hillbilly bullshit?
That's now, Pride, they used to dock, right? The yellow card was a
pay. But the yellow card is a penalty,
penalty for being boring. Most of them were,
yeah, and sometimes irresponsibly. Like I've watched some of those yellow cards. I'm like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
You're crazy. Take that back.
Yeah.
You gave that guy a yellow card. He can't fight any harder.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Or he can't engage. He's going to get lit up. There's moments where you have to try to figure out what the fuck to do. You're on the outside. You're trying to figure out how to get in.
Right.
And you get in, and then the referee's like, come on, fight. And you're like...
But in Asia, some of them. I used to work a lot at this Korean show, and they change. They're figuring out their style. But man, when I first got there, they're like, so there's a yellow card. Any backward step. A back step, any back step. You said we want to give a yellow card. And I was like,
Lyoto Machida would never make any money.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if I can do with that. I don't think that's. I mean, you invited me over here for a reason. I'm just going to do what I do and hope you bring me back. But yeah, I don't know if I can do that.
You.
Yeah,
good for you. Yeah. Do you ever go to a place and the commissions or a promoter will tell you, hey, fights go to the ground, I want you to give it just a couple of seconds and stand them up?
I go places and people tell me what to do all the time.
Really?
And I'm not going to do it. Because people, at the end of the day, no one's going to know that you told me to do it. It's going to be me doing it.
100%.
So, Thank you. So I'm going to, basically.
I'm so glad you just said it that way, too. Because that's people need to get that in their head. Because I know that sometimes people do get affected by whether they want to please a promoter or please a crowd, or and they're not doing the right thing. It's such a tremendous responsibility.
Yeah, you're going to be, but you're the one who's going to be for some of those choices. You know, those choices that they made, they're making those choices with your name. So, yeah.
Yeah,
it's, yeah, like the backstep.
Kevin Johnson.
I think he's answering the guy, but this is a tweet from the Bare Knuckle FC.
Okay, Kevin Johnson. No money was taken from any fighters. That statement did exactly what it's supposed to. What was supposed? It didn't say to. Supposed and lit a fire under every single fighter's ass. From that point on, giving you one of the greatest fights you'll ever see. No. No, those guys fought that way because that's who the fuck they are.
Right. Yeah.
That had nothing to do with that. Jason Knight and Artem Lobov fight that way.
Yeah. You can't claim credit for for Jason Knight doing what he did.
And Artem Lobov. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah, they would fight that way in a fucking Walmart parking lot.
Yeah.
That's how those guys would fight every time they fight. They're animals.
Jason Knight, both those dudes are so tough.
Jason Knight has my favorite nickname. Hick Diaz.
Yeah. That's like,
he's a bad motherfucker. He's a bad motherfucker. But it was tough looking at their faces, man. Mm-hmm. After the fight, I was like, man, I might have to rethink my position on bare knuckle fights. Look at their faces afterwards.
Yeah.
I mean, that is crazy. You know, it's a lifetime of cuts.
Yeah.
All over the face. I mean, look at his right under his nose. Crazy cut, man. He's just stitched the fuck up all over the place. That is rough, man. His whole face got lacerated. I mean, that is a lot of cuts.
Yeah.
That's more like a Muay Thai fight, and it really makes you think. But again,
that's got to be the most brutal, right?
Muay Thai? Yeah, I believe so. Muay Thai bare knuckle would be like, what do they call that, lethwei?
Uh-huh.
Where they kind of like wrap the hands up in a hand wrap.
Yeah.
It's not bare knuckle, but it's I think bare knuckle Muay Thai would be the hardest. But the thing, what my argument was always, and it still remains this, that if you're not going to pad anything else, like you're not going to pad the shins, you're not going to pad the knees or the elbows, mm-hmm. why are you padding the knuckles? You're just giving people a false sense of security in terms of what is actually effective. We don't want to practice something that doesn't really work if you don't have gloves on, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if every time you punch someone you don't have gloves on, your hand would break. Clearly you can't punch people. It's stupid. You got to use elbows and knees and you got to do something else. I see
what you're saying. Right.
So in order to fight with your knuckles as much as UFC fighters do, mm-hmm. you pad everything. You pad, you put wraps, you put padding over it. Boxing is like, it's a different world as soon as you take gloves off.
Yeah.
It's a different world. Punches get in that you can't block. It's way more consequence, a lot mm-hmm. more cuts. But at least now we know what actually works.
Right. I see what you're saying. I wasn't thinking about it from that point of view. Yeah, that is giving people are thinking that, yeah, you're right. Like, people think that boxing, well, before MMA, you're thinking it was the most effective way of doing things.
Yeah.
But then when you, MMA is a whole different from the size of the boxing glove, mm-hmm. of the techniques you can do and what you can't do and what's going to work and what's not going
to
work.
Yeah. It's supposed to be the sport of fighting, and you've basically brought it down to a raw form, but you're still covering the knuckles and padding the knuckles just because of perception. And see, the problem with that guy, this bare-knuckle boxing guy, when he says some stupid shit like that, is that it reinforces what people don't like about combat sports, mm-hmm. what people don't like about the idea of bare-knuckle boxing, that it's brutal and it's just there for chaos and
right,
blood.
Right.
We come for action. We're here to see action. That guy's like
people think that about MMA.
Yeah.
And I don't think that... MMA athletes, I think, are the most honorable and well-behaved and, you know, not because of fear or anything, because of what the sport is.
Yes.
You're getting out. Like, I mean, people, they know, you know, that they're, because our aggressive nature is being put in a channeled in an organized way, and it makes sense. I'll tell you, one of the most aggressive, I run around the Rose Bowl, when I see the Peloton come around, that's one of the most aggressive things I've seen. Man, those dudes are constantly cursing each other out and cursing everybody else out. All the little soccer moms out there trying to run around the Rose Bowl. But
really?
The guys, yeah, man. Oh, but the guys throwing punches are never, you know, cursing people out. You know?
So the runners?
No, no.
What's a Peloton?
The guys on the bikes.
But isn't that like, oh, I thought Peloton, you stand still.
I don't know. I'm talking about the guys at the Rose Bowl. It's really.
It's a bike race?
No, I'm saying they'll train there.
Oh.
When they come out and they train, man.
So they're riding stationary bikes.
That's no, they're saying? Riding together.
They're riding together.
And they're out there.
They're not racing?
They're training.
And they're yelling at each other?
There's some aggressive. Those dudes are aggressive.
Because they're cutting each other off and shit? Is that
maybe just
happening?
Maybe just to follow the rules right or just.
There's the word Peloton, which means a group of cyclists. It's not the same as the brand.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So the cyclists get together and
they're
racing.
I backed off of it because I didn't think I'd use the word properly.
No, you're right.
But, you know, I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I thought I used a big word and made a mistake. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Okay.
So these people, they're racing and they're cussing each other out.
They're training.
Oh, so not racing. They're just training together on the same track.
I think they're training together. Well, it's at the Rose Bowl. Okay, you've been to the Rose Bowl, right?
Yes.
You know the there's a running loop?
Yeah.
You go and you can get in 5K around it real quick. Yeah. Those dudes are intense.
Really?
Way more intense than I see our athletes acting.
Well, because there's not as much consequences.
Right.
You know, they're not going to get off the bike and beat each other's asses.
I feel like they're about to talk shit.
Really?
Yeah.
I bet they are. Well, it's like...
One time I wish one of them would have come back and he said some stuff to me.
It's like road rage, right?
You get
road ragey when you're in your car.
Yeah. I was like, your workout's done. Don't do another lap. I'm looking for you.
That's at the Rose Bowl.
Oh, okay. And so they get mad at each other because they're trying to pass and shit?
Oh, man, it's intense. It's aggressive. Maybe because there's probably rules to it, I think. Mm-hmm. I think there's like probably there's probably a lot of structure as to riding in a pack like that.
Right.
And then also they're trying to get their workout in, and they're on the and then there's other people out there trying to do other stuff, and they're real serious about theirs. Mm. I mean, you know?
Yeah.
It's aggressive. Maybe it's just shocking to me because it doesn't look like it would be that aggressive.
Right, because when you think about fighters, like especially guys even training together, it's rare that they swear at each other or talk shit to each other. Like if two guys get in an argument, like if somebody doesn't let go, somebody tapped and people scream or something like that.
Yeah, and so that's the other thing. I think that's why the respect has, because to get better, you have to put yourself in situations where you're going to be at a disadvantage and vulnerable. And so you have to trust your training partners to have this level of respect, and you're going to have to reciprocate that.
Yeah, well, you know especially with things like leg locks.
Yes, exactly.
You got to be really careful to let go quick.
And man, this leg lock game that people are doing now today.
I need to learn it. I don't know it.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I used to think I was good at leg locks. And
they used to be so simple.
Yeah. And then, because, you know, I guess it wouldn't take much to be good at leg locks. You just have to be willing to do them back in the day, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody else is like, no, it's the...
Yeah.
So, yeah. But
it
now,
used to be like a simple setup.
Yeah.
You dive on a heel hook, dive on a toe hold.
Mm-hmm.
Now dudes are very intense.
Yeah, and there's other stuff. Yeah, some people were good at it. They were doing other things. Yeah, like maybe the way they hide their feet or the way they do this.
Well, I got to say that the first guy in modern MMA that started really wrecking people with leg locks was Imanari.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then Paul Harris.
Yeah.
It was Imanari and Paul Harris. Those are the two guys. I remember George Gurgel. He fought Imanari, and Imanari ripped his fucking knee apart, man. And, you know, Gurgel's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. Mm-hmm. It was very early in the fight. Imanari just did that Imanari roll, just dove on the knee, and next thing you know, he's got you in a fucking inverted heel hook.
And then Paul Harris, anything, you can't defend. It's like...
He's too strong.
Yeah, he's too strong. So he can do, and the way he's built, he can do a lot of stuff that just doesn't make sense. Remember he had that guy against the cage on a single. It's like nobody's worried about a leg lock from there. Boom, invert it. Those legs grab
ripped
you.
It apart.
You're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was devastating. He didn't let go, and he would really, really mangle your fucking knee.
Right. Yeah. So, like, that's when, like, I remember when, because I got to referee him in Brazil before he was doing a lot in the UFC. And so I kind of seen him I think one might have been a tournament format. And I've never had any problem, but, you know, he stopped when I told him to, you know,
There's one fight of his from, I think it was from Brazil, where he's got somebody in a leg lock and he's not letting go. And I think it's a leg lock. See if you can find it. But it's an early fight in his career, but it's crazy. Like, they're like trying to pull him off the guy and he's not letting him go. Like a pit bull.
Right. You know? And he's so strong.
So strong. And apparently his upbringing was horrific.
Yeah, like I heard he had a tough one. He's, you know, it's weird. It's like, because you see that behavior, and I always see him. He seems like You know how some people have a cool energy when they're just around?
Yeah.
It always makes me smile when I see him. Yeah, but yeah. I don't smile when I see that. I mean, you know what I mean? But he's one of those guys that's like...
Soft-spoken.
Yeah.
Easygoing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think something happens to that guy when he engages. You know, when you're in locked mm-hmm. in Mortal Kombat, he becomes just pure savage.
Yeah, and he... You know? When he... I mean, he does leg locks that no one else does because no one else is strong enough to do... To have those legs that just when he, you know what I mean? He doesn't care if both legs are there, arms in there, anything's in there. It's all smushed. It's all trapped.
it's all getting trash compacted.
Yeah.
You know, he had a very interesting grappling match with Gary Tonin. Did you ever see that?
I did see that, yeah. I didn't, I saw some clips of it, like some bits of it, yeah.
It really shows you how good Gary Tonin is.
Yeah, Tonin's amazing. Yeah, he's
because
great.
Because Paul Harris is so much bigger than him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's probably 40, 50 pounds heavier than him. Mm-hmm. He's much bigger than him, you know, and to watch those guys go back and forth is mm-hmm. really, really interesting.
Yeah, but yeah, Tony, like he's one of those people who you get a position, but it's still just so hard to, so he can just move away, you know?
Well, his grappling's so elite, and he's getting really good at striking now, too, mm-hmm. and he's really dedicated to MMA, and he's undefeated. He's been fighting in ONE FC, which I'm excited.
Right.
I'm very excited about ONE FC. I love what they're mm-hmm. doing. I love the attitude they're taking of making it about respect and martial arts and bringing it to, like, some old-school martial arts values. They're fucking gigantic right now in Asia.
They put on great fights. Yeah.
And they have the best fighter in the world. They have Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson.
And what's really cool is because there's a lot of guys in Asia who are really exciting to watch at that weight. So it's kind of exciting to see him get over there with all these guys. I'm really excited about that.
Well, he got tested in his first fight. I mean, he won by submission, but he got tested. And Alvarez got stopped by that Russian dude, Timothy. What is his last name? The guy that stopped... God damn it, I forget his name. The guy that stopped Eddie Alvarez? Timothy. It's Timothy, not Timothy. It's some strange Russian name.
Timothy?
No, I don't remember his last name. But anyway, he's a beast.
Nastyukin.
Nastyukin, yeah. Hey, yeah, that's right. Nasty is in his last name.
Yeah.
Nastyukin. The first letters of his last name are nasty. Timothy Nastyukin. Did you see that fight?
No.
Play the stoppage. Play the knockout, the far right one. No, the far right one. That one right there. Oh, yeah? Okay. Yeah. Just play right there. There you go. This dude is, this Russian cat's a beast, man. He was very seasoned in there, like really relentless with his pressure and super confident in his power. And he stunned Alvarez a couple times in that fight. I was pretty shocked. I think there are a lot of guys that aren't in the UFC that are capable of fighting in the UFC.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, definitely. There's I get to see a lot of those guys at those shows in Russia.
See, I'm watching this cat, and this is not like a freak knockout or something like that. This guy's got real smart technical striking, and he also puts tremendous pressure on, mm-hmm. and he's also got big power.
And they're amateur combat sports.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, combat sambo and things like that, they get a lot of experience.
Yeah. Well, when you see a guy like Khabib Nurmagomedov mm-hmm. just run through people in the UFC and you know where that guy's from, you got to mm-hmm. go, well, how many more of those guys are over there? You know?
Yeah.
The Dagestan crew, and that's mm-hmm. Zabit, too. He's from Dagestan. Isn't Islam Makhachev, isn't he from that part of the world as well?
Yeah, yeah. That's where...
Killers. Here he is. Boom, mm-hmm. boom, 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 mm. boom. That's it.
Yeah. So the caucuses, right?
Yeah. That's a warrior group of people.
Yeah. There's a lot of
history.
So I get to go there a lot. I mean, it's really exciting. I get to see a lot of really cool stuff.
What is Dagestan like?
Okay, Dagestan was a blast. Dagestan was fun, man.
Really?
Yeah. I went there. I was there with who was also at the show. They brought over Verdun and. And those guys weren't working. Verdun and Anderson Silva, those guys were watching fights. Just, you know, but I was working. But, right. They took us around. They showed us a lot of really cool stuff. I went to, like, school where some kids, wrestling school. Schools that were athletic, with an athletic orientation. And seeing these little kids. Man, they put this little kid up on a bar and had him doing pull-ups, man. He was doing pull-ups. I mean, this little kid, little bitty kid, did, I mean, it must have been at least 15 pull-ups. And then
how old was he?
I mean, he was a little kid.
like 5, 6?
No, like something like 9 or something like that. And when the coach pulled him off, he was mad. You could see he was mad. He's like, man, I got more. You know what I mean? He was mad, like, well, to show the people what I could do. Wow. But and the crowd, they loved MMA so much. They were like, it was like, you know what it was like? It was like, you ever watch those videos of like the Beatles, you know what I mean? When all the people going crazy, but it's not teenage girls. It's like a bunch of hard little wrestlers. Wow. All out, just packs, like, ah! Yeah, I've got some pictures from somewhere. Yeah, I can show them to you.
Wow. So it's that popular over there?
Yeah.
That's did you see the video of those dudes when Khabib beat Conor and they're shooting machine guns into the air?
Oh, I didn't see that, but I saw one of my friends from that area sent me some pictures. She was out on the street. She sent some pictures to my wife of them, some video of guys shooting and horse racing. Had horses. There were horses down. Yeah, some video. That was like, oh,
Horse racing and shooting guns at the same
time.
Yeah,
like people were so excited about that. That was some energy there, yeah.
I mean, can you imagine? You're from a place that many parts of the world have never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much I thought about Dagestan before Khabib came around. And then now they have not just a world champion, but a guy who smashed the most famous fighter on the planet.
Right,
one of the most famous fighters on the planet. It's like him and Floyd Mayweather are probably the two most famous fighters.
Yeah,
And Khabib just ran through him. So, like, he's a huge, huge star over there.
Yeah, he's huge. So, it's a fun place to go. Matter of fact, I got to see a lot of cool stuff.
Look at this. Dagestan explosive delight after Khabib defeats McGregor. They're all going crazy with their hats on. Mm-hmm. Look at people out in the street cheering.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, man. Connor's all the shit talk leading up to that fight, man, did that backfire. Like, on some people it works, and on some people it's just, it doesn't work at all, and it just makes him more relentless. When Khabib was hitting him going, let's talk now. Come on, let's talk now.
Well, that's the thing with him, you know, because he talks the whole time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from the beginning of the day, he starts talking.
Khabib does?
Oh, yeah, he starts talking.
Really?
Yeah.
What does he say?
Well, didn't you hear when he was fighting Johnson?
Yes, he's telling him, give up.
Yeah.
You know, I need that title shot, give up. And then he got him in that horrific Kimura. I was watching that Kimura. I was like, don't just fucking tap. Come on, man, tap. Come on, man. Just feeling everything going pop, snap, pop. They didn't want to tap, man. Johnson's a tough guy.
Yeah, but the smack talk, I mean, that's what Connor does.
You know? Yeah, but this was a different level. Let's talk.
Mm.
He's like, come on, let's talk now. Can we hear it?
It's Michael Johnson. Yeah.
Oh.
In between all that,
you have to give up.
You have to give up.
Yeah. He sounds like he really cares about him, too.
You know this, I deserve it. I have to fight for the title. You know this, I deserve it. As he's beating him.
All right. Yeah.
And he's talking to someone on the sideline. I smash your boy. The scariest thing that he ever said was about Connor, I want to change his face.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oof. Yeah. I want to change his face. Like, oof. Jesus.
Yeah. So I heard he's retired, right?
Connor?
Yeah.
You don't buy it, right?
No, I don't. Yeah.
If you had a guess,
yeah,
he's fighting yet. Hans Mollenkamp, you know Hans from Monster.
He sent me
a picture of sparring with Connor today.
Oh, okay.
So Connor's training.
Yeah, I know Hans.
He's doing something.
He's a monster or something.
Yeah. He works for Monster. He's training. He's gonna fight. He's probably just fucking with people. You know, I mean, Connor's a master showman in terms of like how to keep people interested in him, and I just think he got way out of line with all this Khabib stuff. You know?
But I like the way he takes his losses.
Oh, he took it well.
I like the way he goes out there and talks smack with every win. I think from a sports psychology point of view, I think he's developed there. You know?
Yeah, but I don't think the way to get another fight with Khabib is to continue to talk shit after he smashes you. I mean, he doesn't have any reason to. You can just talk shit. Like he didn't just win. He smashed and tapped you. Like it was only like one or two moments in the fight where Connor was taking control with some of the striking and the stand up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's another choke. That's another misunderstood choke, that fulcrum choke that mm-hmm. Khabib got Connor with. That is a legit neck crank.
Yeah, yeah.
And people that don't think, that, oh, he tapped to that, like, you would tap to that too. And if you didn't, you're stupid.
And people are like, yeah, because the chin was down there, mm-hmm. right there. Like, you could, there's a lot, when you're, there's a lot of, it generates a lot of force.
Yeah.
It can unhinge your jaw, for one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Rip and your face apart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
a legit. That's a legit submission.
Yeah, especially with that, the back of the
forearm. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Against the back. The back of your forearm against mm-hmm. the guy's back as leveraged, with mm-hmm. the, you know, which causes that fulcrum.
Yeah.
That's horrific.
It's very powerful.
Yeah, it hurts bad, man. There's a lot of those neck cranks. It's just like, oh, you watch people and you just go, please tap. Yeah, there it is right there. Mm-hmm. Like, you see with Khabib's uh-huh. left arm, the way it's pressing uh-huh. against the back of Connor, and then also yanking on that. That is ripping his fucking neck apart, man.
Yeah, you've never, you until you felt one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Connor, it's interesting that the way he's posted up like that, he's trying to get up and he's mm-hmm. getting cranked at the same time.
Yeah.
You got to kind of, he was already, he had already been smashed by then too. You know, he'd been hit with so many big punches from the top. He takes a great shot though. I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's just one of those things where I think in order for him to really have a real chance at getting another shot, what he's got to do is beat somebody big and say something that makes Khabib consider it, you know, but not in the way of what he's been doing in terms of, you know, talking shit about him and talking mm-hmm. smack. I mean, I think the only way it's going to be public demand, like he's going to have to get to a position where people want to see him fight Khabib again to see that the result may be different this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe if he could just fucking communicate something to him. Say, you know, I respect you, you know, all trash talk aside, you know, I'd like to test myself against you one more time, and I think I earned it. I think that's the only way he's going to get it. I think mm-hmm. the only way he's going to get it is to win a couple of fights, beat some real big-name guys, and then make it so that's something that Khabib's actually interested in.
Well, okay, so I don't know if that's the only way, but it's the way that would be that I would like to see.
They already offered it to Khabib, and mm-hmm. Khabib said, fuck off.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but like that path that you're talking about sounds like one that fits good for me. Yeah, I'd like to see it that way.
Yeah. Do you think that trash talking in MMA has gone too far, or do you like it?
I think it's entertaining.
Yeah.
For some people, I think it's not. Well, here it's hard. Well, because it's not. It's not always what I want to see, and it's not. I don't know, it's not the type of person I am, but not everyone's going to be me. That's what makes the world go around.
Right.
And a lot of people want to see it. And also sometimes it does bring some energy and some, you know, when it's well done, it does bring some energy and some excitement to the fight and to the sport. And at the same time, not every fight, I think what's really interesting and what's really excited about the UFC is that there's a lot of fights that people want to see that have no bearing on the title.
Right.
And so there's something to that. Fights that just people want to see. And I think trash talk sometimes makes fights that people want to see.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it makes mm-hmm. things emotional, makes things intense. It's great for selling things. It's great for selling pay-per-views. But the question is, like, is it good for the sport overall? And should it be something that we encourage?
Well, that's the thing is, how do we decide what's good for the sport? In what way?
Right. How do we decide?
Is it good for the way the sport, do you want the sport to look as far as martial arts and being a respectful thing and people looking at us like that? Maybe not. Is it good for the sport or the growth of the sport and for more opportunities for our athletes and for our athletes to become names that draw attention from other people that normally didn't know about it? I don't know.
I don't know either.
But yeah, so I don't know. I'm
torn.
Mm-hmm.
I like both. I like a Lyoto Machida type character that's very respectful and bows mm-hmm. and never talks trash and fights like a, you know, just a world champion caliber martial artist. And I also like a guy who talks mad shit. Mm-hmm. I think it's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I like press conferences for that very reason, where, you know, guys are talking shit to each other and they're looking over at each other on the podium and mm-hmm. you know, it's funny.
Oh, come on. There's some of them, yeah, some of it is hilarious.
Yeah. How about Connor when Jeremy Stevens asked him for a fight? He's like, "Who the fuck is that guy?"
No, it was the fact that when he got up, when it was like, "Okay, I don't have time to insult everyone, so let's get them all in one place."
Right. Well, that was great.
So I can insult everyone at one time. Yeah. Let's be efficient. Come on, this is comedy, man.
When he was talking about it's red panties night.
Yeah, that was
comedy. We made it, baby. We got that Conor McGregor fight. Come on. He's a fucking character, man.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
He's in that weird situation, though, where he really never has to fight again. Mm-hmm. So you got to wonder what his motivation is. You know, like, he has $100 million. He has a gigantic whiskey company. That Proper 12 is murdering it. That place is killing it. That company is, they're moving into other countries now. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're killing it. He doesn't have to do a thing, ever. Financially?
Right.
Unless he wants to eat diamond sandwiches. He's like, he basically could do whatever the fuck he wants for the rest of his life and just live off interest. But he still likes to fight.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, that's what brought him into the Khabib fight. He didn't have to fight Khabib. But just, you know, how much does he want it? I mean, does he want it the same way a guy like Stylebender wants it, or a guy like Kelvin Gastelum wants it?
And also, I think that, you know, part of wanting it is different, too. Maybe people might want things on their terms, too, on certain terms of way you get it is way. Like some people are like, "Oh, you'll want it. I want it any way I can get it." Some people might want it and say, "Well, now I want it this way."
Well, he was going to fight Cowboy. That was a fight that they were basically trying to make, but it was going to have to be a co-main event. And because of that, I think Connor was not interested anymore. He wanted it to be a main event, you know. And I'm like, Jesus. Like, is that really what kept us from Connor versus Cowboy? Can you guys work that out? That would have been great,
right? Yeah, Connor versus Cowboy?
Make that a fucking main event. Like, make some malarkey title. Come up with some 160-pound title or some shit. Just come on, man. Do it. I mean, they give out these interim titles left and right. How about you come up with
Everybody
some malarkey?
Everybody was excited when that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was excited to see it.
165-pound malarkey title. Just come on, man. Connor versus Cowboy for the title.
Yeah.
Make a title up. But that's, or even what without a title,
just make it.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it would hurt at all. But apparently Dana says it makes a big difference in the amount of pay-per-views they
have. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
But now that they're over at ESPN Plus, is it really going to be? I mean, how does that work now? You pay every month, and then you pay a little more for the pay-per-view? Is that what it is? Is that how it works? How much more is it?
It's just like $5 less, or whatever it is that you're paying.
So it's $5 less because you're monthly.
Yeah, monthly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a good deal if you're into watching all those fights on ESPN Plus. It is nice. They do have a great library. But so does Fight Pass, right? Where does that put Fight Pass?
No, but Fight Pass, I can't see some of the stuff that's on.
Yeah, there's other stuff on Fight Pass. There's this other...
Oh, yeah. Way more. There's weird, obscure Muay Thai organizations. And Fight Pass is awesome for the gym. I have a little home gym with Apple TV on it, and I always have Fight Pass on. Kickboxing, watch obscure Muay Thai fights, like right from the arena in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really cool. Like 100-pound guys beating the shit out of each other.
Submission wrestling, too.
Oh, yeah. A lot of Abu Dhabi stuff is on there. Mm-hmm. All Eddie Bravo stuff is on there. All the Eddie Bravo Invitational Combat Jiu-Jitsu is on there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Jiu-Jitsu is in a great place right now, too, right? I mean, there's so many different martial arts that are really at the pinnacle right now. I mean, I think this is such an amazing time for a person.
Right, so many people. Yeah. Martial arts. This is a great time for martial arts.
Well, you remember when you and I first got into it, there was nothing like what it is now. Yeah. Nothing. I mean, martial arts have been around for thousands and thousands of years. And the level of martial arts since 1993 to today is, it's indescribably more powerful today. Like, the athletes are so much better. The fighters are so much more well-rounded. Exactly. Yeah. And even in jiu-jitsu, if you go back to and watch old jiu-jitsu matches from like 93, and of course you're going to have like your Hicks and Gracies and your Higa Machados and John Chonk Machados who are at that elite level even back then where they can hang with guys today. But overall, the game is like so much more complex.
And also even just the athleticism you see in it today.
Yeah.
These dudes are some animals.
Yeah. No, it's incredible. And really what's interesting to me is that you're really only seeing a small percentage of the elite athletes that are available in North America that even decide to get into it.
Right, right.
Like, if you talk about how many elite athletes decide to go into baseball or NFL or NBA versus how many elite athletes go into cage fighting, it's not even close.
Right, right. Right. But starting to get some of them, slowly but surely.
A little bit.
And some of them are starting to get an interest, and jiu-jitsu is a reason why. Some of them are getting an interest in jiu-jitsu. They train, right?
Like, yeah, for cross-training, doing it for something. But just people want to learn it, you know? Mm-hmm,
yeah.
I mean, if you're a big guy, but you don't know how to fight,
yeah,
that's got to suck. Big old giant guy who doesn't actually know how to fight, like, fuck, man, better learn some of this shit.
Right.
Yeah. It's just, for those big athletes, the really big paydays are at NFL. And that's the other thing, too, is that a lot of those guys are bigger than 265 pounds.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they would have to cut a lot of weight to make 265, which is, isn't that weird that we have a heavyweight division that you have to weigh in for?
Yeah, no, I think that is interesting. But I wonder what the super heavyweight division would look like.
It would probably be just a small handful of giant guys. It would probably be like the flyweights. Right, yeah, in terms of like how few, unless Iceland, they get those Iceland strongman dudes, they start fighting MMA.
Have you seen what's his name, the Polish Pujanowski?
Yeah, Pujanowski fights a lot now.
I like it. And you know what, people were kind of, you know, giving him a hard time about it, but man, Puja, I have a lot of respect for him, man.
Yes.
He fights hard. He brought a lot, put a lot of eyes on our sport.
Yes.
Pujanowski, I'm a fan.
He's still fighting.
Yeah, he's still fighting.
He's gotten way better.
He's gotten better. And
way smaller.
He never fights any chumps.
No.
And he brings it. And dude. Like,
here he is. Look at him. Look at the size of that motherfucker still. And look at, he looks skillful now. He's moving much better. And here's the thing. This fucking guy's got balls of steel.
Yeah,
he fought Tim Sylvia. Yeah.
I refereed ridiculous. That fight. Yeah, I was like, I could not believe that that's who they put him up against for as early in his career. Like,
who
that's what
the
I'm saying.
Fuck.
The respect. That's what I'm like. I'm respect. Like, when they're, I was like, respect. You chose him.
Yeah. But it was ridiculous. And he chose him very early in his career.
Very
where
early. Yeah.
He really didn't have the skills that he has now. And Tim is a world champion.
And the type of body that's very hard for Pujanowski.
Oh, yeah. Long and tall.
Long limbed wrestler who can put his hands on your hips and control your levers and really make you, you know, your muscles get fatigued.
And make you gas out.
Yeah.
Started from the beginning so you could see what it was like early from the beginning. I mean, Tim just started beating the shit out of him once he got tired. But it's interesting because Tim has the opposite of Pujanowski's body.
Right.
Like, he doesn't have the best genetics. Just tough.
And people think that Puja's setup is going to be, but actually it's very hard to fight somebody like Tim.
No, very hard, very hard. Well, he's also got massive experience advantages.
Come on.
I mean, he's fought literally everybody any good all over the world. He fought Fedor. I mean, he fought the greats. He fought Andrei Arlovsky when Arlovsky was a straight-up murderer.
Mm-hmm.
When Arlovsky was in his prime.
Yeah.
Randy Couture. Mm-hmm. You know, when Frank Mir broke his arm and he tried to keep fighting.
Yeah.
That's you too, right?
I got to referee that. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Because I remember the crowd was booing. Like, boo. I was like, you guys, you need to look at this.
Yeah. No, I will tell you about that because that was a fun story because, like, I hadn't really, it was one of the first times I think they had trusted me with a championship. And he, you know, the arm broke. I heard it. I saw it. And I remember, you know, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about my job right then because what I did is I backed off and I let the doctor come in and examine him. Because, like, you know, sometimes when you're dealing with an expert, you don't want to clout the way. You're supposed to get out of the way.
Right.
Like, you don't go to the mechanic and tell him what to do. So my mind was thinking like that about the doctor. And so, of course, he comes in. She doesn't know what she saw. So he misguides her and says, I think he's worried about this. And then she's like, hey, no, nothing's wrong. And I was like, oh, man. In my mind, I was thinking it's been great being here, but I'm not going to be doing this anymore. You know what I mean? And then, you
that's
know.
Interesting. He made that switch already in your
head. I swear. I was like, in my mind, I was thinking that. I was thinking about how to get out of there when they start throwing stuff.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, because the Miletich camp, maybe you remember they were over there wrestling with the Samoan security guards trying to get in there. And people
screaming,
going crazy.
Yelling.
Yeah, people are screaming.
Yeah, here it is.
No, that's another
Minotauro.
One.
That's Minotauro.
That's his other.
That was an awful break.
Yeah.
That was an awful one.
Yeah, so then I was thinking about that, and then, you know, but then you found it.
Yeah.
You saved me. Like, I was thinking that my retribution was going to be, like, some kid on the internet 2 weeks later. Like, I found out his arm was broken. But you found the spot, and so then that's
Well, I was watching the replay, and I was like, let's take a look at this. Hold on, hold on. What's that? Like, look at his arm. I'm like, that's a broken arm. Like, that arm is broken. Look at that. Watch it one more time. Oh, and I had the truck roll it back again. Yeah. And then I went into the octagon, and I remember saying immediately, like, you guys need to watch this. Like, here we go. Let's play this. Here we go. That's a broken arm.
So I'm going to thank you for that right there, because I think my career path would have been different.
Well, that was one of those things where I felt an obligation to not just interview the fighter, but to explain to the entire crowd, like, you got to listen. This is a, I know it looked crazy to me too. This is a broken arm. Like, this guy's fucked right now.
Three places.
And Tim thanked you afterwards for saving his career, because he said, if you didn't stop that fight and that became a compound fracture, fuck, man, horrible things happen when the bone breaks through the skin.
Yeah.
And that would have definitely happened.
I saw him afterwards and I said, man, did you know your arm was broken? And he told me, he goes, yeah, I know. Well, then what was your plan? Why are you trying to continue? So I knew I had a minute before the pain really became crippling.
Yeah. See, here it is, and watch this part. Right, snap, right there. I mean, that is 100% a double break.
Yeah.
Both bones of the forearm snapped in half, and it's an unusual break because of where it is.
Yeah.
That just shows you how fucking strong Frank Mir's armbar is.
And how long-limbed he is. And what was also weird is how his arm went back into place.
Mm-hmm.
How young and muscular. I talked to the doctor. They say that happens sometimes with athletes. The muscles just put it right back in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he had a plate put in there, maybe forever. It's still in there. Look at me, young, little fresh-faced Joe Rogan.
Man, that was...
Look how young Frank looks.
Uh-huh.
It's crazy. He looks so lean and young. And he's a big old giant dude now. He was a fantastic commentator.
Yeah, no, he's a really good commentator.
Really good commentator. I'm amazed that no one snatched him up to do commentary.
Well, you know, it's funny. He was working for ACA.
Yeah?
He just stopped, though. He was there for a while. And his commentary, what's weird is he's, as a commentator, when I like listening to him, his commentary, and also just talking to him, he always comes up with an angle that I never think of.
Mm.
And it makes sense. It's worth hearing. You're always like, what's Frank going to say about this? You know what I mean? Sometimes, he gets some weird angles.
Very smart dude. Very well-read dude, too.
Yeah.
Really misunderstood guy in a lot of ways. But Frank was, I think it was one of the Lesnar fight, when he fought Lesnar, either before the first fight or the second fight.
Yeah.
I forget which fight it was. He said he wanted Lesnar to be the first death inside the cage. And the UFC was like, what the fuck are you saying?
And then they
pulled him out of the commentary for saying that. And he's like, look, I'm just talking up a fight. And that was it. He was doing WEC at that point, remember?
Right.
Yeah. Dude, he was really good, man. Mm-hmm. I remember listening to his commentary. I'm like, this guy, I'm a big fan of former fighters doing it. I think they do the best commentary.
He does great commentary.
Daniel Cormier.
Daniel Cormier.
Cormier is fantastic.
He's really good.
Dominic.
You know who else I like? I like Dan Hardy.
Dan Hardy's excellent at it.
Yeah, Dan Hardy's really good.
He's actually kind of morphed into, I mean, he really is as solid as anyone, including myself, is doing professional commentary. He's as good as anybody.
When we're talking about that
too.
Oh, Felder's good.
He's talking outstanding. About
that one, that fight. That's where I learned definitely that when the doctor with the dealer, that they don't know what we all take for granted, that it's the arm. So that was kind of my fault for him. Now I definitely always tell him, look, this is exactly what happened. This is what I'm worried about. This particular part, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's got to be huge for you because, like, if a woman gets into the octagon or a man and they don't know anything about the sport, they're just there because they're a doctor.
Right.
They would have no idea what the fuck
happened. Yeah, and I didn't even I know it seems like that should be the first thing I thought about, but yeah, I didn't.
Long ass time ago, bro.
Yeah.
How many fights do you think you've called?
No, out of thousands, man.
Thousands.
Wow. Yeah, a lot. Yeah, thousands.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
If you really stop and think about all that experience, do you do seminars for young up and coming referees?
I do. I just did it this weekend.
Yeah, where at?
In Pasadena.
Oh.
So you can go on my website, find out about herbdean.com. Also, you can follow me at herbdeanmma on Instagram. That's where I usually do stuff.
Yeah, we linked that on the Instagram page when I posted the picture, you with the blowtorch.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. I'm ready to see this explosion of followers right here.
It's coming, baby.
It's coming. Explosion. So I do it. It's a fun, I just did it. It's a cool thing because I like doing it because it makes me better every time. It makes me have to think about things. I look at, so we spend 3 days doing it. So
they say that about teaching anything, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it makes me a lot better. And I always dread it when I'm going to do it, because sometimes I dread doing it. And then I haven't finished the whole other part. The other part I don't like is I have to say no, because it's for a certificate. And the certificate is what you need, a certificate to get licensed. And so some people aren't going to achieve the certificate.
Mm.
So they can come and, you know, take the seminar, but there is screening.
Right.
Yeah. So the first day we go over a bunch of stuff. Then they teach me some technique, and you know what I mean? And so we understand that they understand what's going on in there. And so as far as for judging, how to evaluate what these guys are actually doing. And then,
so when you say they teach you technique, like they'll you'll say to them, "Hey, show me how to set up a triangle."
Yeah, so I go to the we do it in Pasadena. So I do it at the Courtyard Marriott right there. We got a classroom. Then I can walk two blocks down and take one block to the right and be at Savant Young's Fight Academy. Go right there, step straight onto the mat. We do a warm up where we get to see a lot of stuff. Okay, yeah, show me arm drag. Show me this. We get a lot of information right there. We take a few notes. All right, yeah, show me a pass. Show me that. Show me that. Then I have them, yeah, teach me a triangle. Teach me by the numbers. Teach me, you know, as it was taught to you, or like, and I don't care if you learned it on the internet, but why do you like it? And what do you do different to make it work for you? And just talk me through it. Give me as much information as I can. One guy this weekend took my course and he gave me so much. I mean, I couldn't wait. Every time he was going, it was really good. He was a really detailed instructor, but he was really good. I got a lot of information from some of the other people who I thought was going to be good, because in the beginning we tell why we're here. It sounded like I had a high level class. A lot of them weren't. They didn't know much about. They didn't know enough about position and submission.
How many guys do you think want to be referees but have no experience in martial arts?
Well, I think there is a lot. I think it's common, you know. On my website, it lets people know, like, hey, physical demonstration of MMA technique is required to achieve certification. You can come out and, you know, take the seminar if that's fun for you, which is cool. Right. My hat's off to you, you know, right. Because there's a lot you can do at your weekend. But if you want the certificate, you need to understand the techniques.
Yeah.
At a level that, you know.
That you can teach.
Yeah. At a detailed level enough, because you have to understand the details to make it successful. And that's why you have to, if you're going to evaluate it as a judge, you know, you have to know why it wasn't successful. And you're going to have to be able to talk it through, why you gave credit to something or didn't give credit to something.
So this is for judging and refereeing.
Judging and refereeing. So the first day I do is judging. And then the judges, the referees, the way I do my certificate, if you want to be a referee, you have to be able to judge also, because everyone assumes that you can, and they'll throw you in the judge's seat. So
you
have a judging training.
Oh, if you like do a small show or something like that?
Yeah.
They'll try to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Small show. So
we used to have this thing where Eddie Bravo used to score the fights between rounds. It was excellent. And what was good about it is Eddie would break it down on a piece of paper. He would have like a right column and a left column. Like right column would be you, left column would be Jamie. And then he would write, okay, Herb took him down three times. Herb almost got an arm bar. Herb landed five leg kicks. Jamie cried a lot. That's what it would say. No, you know what I'm saying? It would say, and then he would add it up, and he would say, this is why I think he won the round. This guy had better position, but this guy landed the big shots. This guy got hurt, but he almost got caught in a submission. So I gave it real close, but I gave it 10-9 to this guy. And so you would get a better understanding, like how Howard Letterman used to do it. Used to do it for HBO Boxing.
And I think that's a good thing. Like, so that's one of the things, like, we don't really have in our sport, like, you know, or the way we score around, we don't really score it, because we don't have like a rubric where we're given a assigned value for techniques as they happen, so we don't, that's not what we're doing. And also, and but I think that's a good idea for training. It's hard to do it the way Eddie does that live doing around, because who can write all that without taking your eyes off for a second?
Right.
And you take your eyes off just for 1 second, you might miss something that was huge, you know?
Yeah.
And so so that's why a lot of commissions, you know.
Well, I think Eddie, what he did was he had, like, he wrote kicks, punches.
Right. He has a shorthand system, I guess, right?
He put X's on the sides. Every time someone took someone down, he put a little X
and
there.
I encourage people to do that. And so that's what I do. Like, I you know, well, I tell them, you know, I show them other, like, different people have different systems of shorthand to take some notes. Mm-hmm. Because in the back, you're going to want to have some notes, especially when when the matches are done, you know, this, they'd say there's a split decision, or there's a split round, there's an outside judge. Everybody's going to be getting their game together, their reasonings, why they gave it that way. So that's you're going to have to be able to talk about. So that's a good way of scoring a round, is preparing yourself to be able to talk about what you actually saw and what happened.
Yeah.
And context to the scoring criteria.
That's awesome. And then this certificate is from you? Is that how it works?
It's from me, but recognized by certain organizations that are going to make it so that you can get a job. So it's from me, and here in the United States, it's recognized by the Association of Boxing Commissions. And if you're going to apply to, let's say, CAMO here in California, you're going to have a certificate of training before you apply to the amateur, or before you apply to, let's say, the Boxing Commission out in Tennessee, to the Athletic Commission out there, or the Athletic Commission in Nevada. They're only going to hire people who have taken a course that's recognized. Big John does one as well.
Yeah.
A couple other people do them.
That's excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. Big John's is coming up in June, that fight week weekend. Does a big one, June 6th and 7th. I just did mine.
June 6th and 7th, where at? Do you know where
he goes? He in Nevada.
In
so,
Vegas?
Yeah, if you look for his social media.
Is there a UFC card that weekend?
Yeah. That's why he does it then.
Yeah,
I'm giving a plug to my competition, but it's okay.
Yeah,
it's okay. At the end of the day, we want people to get some good training and get information.
Well, Big John is not competition anymore. Now he's a commentator.
Yeah, but for my training, he's never as competition as a referee.
Right.
I mean, we're trying to do, but as far as for my course, I want people to take my course. But if they're not going to take mine, I want them to take his.
No, he's awesome too.
Yeah, no, that's
That's there's a few guys that I get very excited when I see that they're refereeing a big fight. I'm like, whew, okay, I don't have
Big
to worry
John.
About that.
Definitely. Big John, I know. Yeah, I've always felt very comfortable.
Damn, he's been in there from the very beginning.
Yeah, from the beginning.
I mean, there is not a person alive that has more old school credibility than Big John.
And more high level fights.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
And he's seen it all, the good, the bad. You remember Murillo Bustamante versus Matt Lindland?
Oh, yeah.
He had to tap him twice.
Yeah.
Big John stopped it, and then Matt Lindland complained that they let him fight again. I'm like, no.
Yeah. Oh, you go bring up bringing up that old. And what about that? The other one too, right? Conan and
Sakuraba. Conan Sakuraba in Japan.
Yeah,
The Japanese made them fight again on the same night. When the fuck has that ever happened?
It's not going to happen again.
Never.
Mm-mm.
And that was from a punch too. Stopped from a punch. Right? He dropped down, grabbed a hold of the ankle. Conan hit him
like
with a punch.
It looked like he
fell. Right.
But that's the way Sakuraba shoots.
Yeah.
He shoots like this. It looks like he, you know.
Like he's going out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then caught Conan in an arm bar in the second fight, the second time they fought night.
That night.
And that was like crazy. We couldn't believe a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt could get tapped.
Uh-huh.
We're like, what? What? And Sakuraba, who's smaller than him.
Right,
like, what?
Right. And then we realized who Sakuraba.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Sakuraba was. He, to me, really carried the flag of catch wrestling, the Carl Gotch style of submission holds, more so than probably anybody else ever fought in MMA.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, his style was all kimuras and arm bars. And, remember when he used to tape his legs up? It looked like the guy could barely walk, man.
Yeah.
How the fuck was he fighting so good? His legs would be mummified.
And he's doing submission wrestling now, right?
Yes. He's fighting. He fought in Quintet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He fought. His crew fought Eddie Bravo's crew.
Right. Now
my friend Richie tapped him. My friend Richie Martinez. Boogeyman, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Boogie
that's a lot for...
Boogie's a bad motherfucker.
A lot to deal with.
Yeah. Unless you're 100% full-time grappler. And Boogie's got nasty darce chokes, man. And, he caught him in a darce.
Yeah, and Boogie's got that all that break dancing weird. And he's always...
His flexibility is ridiculous.
And his
dexterity is ridiculous,
too. So I feel like, you know, there's some people you say, okay, he's good. Then there's some people you look at as so... Like, I've never got to, you know, roll with him, but he looks like... One of those people that, like, you don't know what it feels like until you feel it.
Get
what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's very strong.
Yeah.
His brother is, too. Gio's very strong, too. But then they came from that breakdancing background where they just have the ability to manipulate their body. So it's almost like a gymnast. You know?
Right, exactly.
Like but maybe even more so because they'll, like, do a lot of stuff where they're standing on one arm and bouncing around in the lotus position.
Yeah, yeah.
On one arm, like a one-arm handstand with their legs crisscrossed up in the air and they're bouncing around.
It makes you want to give up. Like, well, there's no need for me to do this.
Keep
I can't
with that yoga, man. You're going to be amazed if you keep with it, how much dexterity improves and your balance improves and everything. Mm-hmm. But we were talking about it before the podcast started, that it's so good for your old injuries, you know, especially that hot yoga.
Mm-hmm. I'm probably a little bit annoying right now. I'm like a little Bikram yoga evangelist.
It's like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu blue belts.
I've been born again. Yeah. I love, Bikram yoga.
Yeah. I'm guilty as charged. I do that shit all the time. Yeah. I do that with everything I like, though.
Mm-hmm.
I get annoying.
It's fun, though. I've been doing it in other countries, too. So, like,
oh, really?
Like, when I take those breaks, that's what gets me, derails me. So I'm like, I'm going to do the extra work, find a place when I get there. So I got to go do it in Prague and Warsaw and St. Petersburg. And there's a little different flavor, you know what I mean? So it's cool.
That's dope. Yeah, I'm a big fan. I like to do it on the road, too. Mostly I do it at home. But it's just, it also, that strain of that 90 minutes, I think, is like meditative. There's no music. You're just in the poses for 90 minutes. It's cleansing.
Yeah.
Releases all the bullshit you hold on to in your brain.
It just it does, yeah.
Sweeps that out the door.
No, it helps with all that.
Herb Dean, we've been talking for 3 hours.
Oh, really?
Can you believe that shit?
Wow.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Flew by.
Hey, but you know what? Actually, it's kind of cool because we hang out with each other a lot, but this is the first time we got to talk for 3 hours.
I know, right?
We've seen each other for years. Yeah,
every time we get some dinner together or hang out at the fights, it's like brief conversations.
Yeah, it's brief. It's at the airport. You know what I mean?
I'm pissed that you're not going to be in Atlanta this weekend, man.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, I know.
What the fuck? How does that work? Like, how do you know, like, when you do and don't get
sometimes
contracts?
They call me, and, there's some athletic commissions I know are going to call me. Atlanta, I thought, would be one of those, that because I've usually done it. When they've been there, I've done it.
How often do they tell you in advance?
They don't tell me that. Sometimes they tell me far, sometimes not so far. So some commissioners, they get on board. Like, I got called about Minnesota pretty early. He reached out. He was aggressive about getting me on there. And he was like, man, I really appreciate that. Figured like, the man wants to make sure I'm there. This Brazil show that's coming up. Cristiano, the commissioner, he reached out to me a long time ago.
Beautiful.
And said, hey, man, I want to make sure you're at
this. Who's on that card?
The Brazil card. Let me see who's on that card. Let's look that up.
Let's see who's on that card. Yeah. I think there's some good fights there. Isn't Aldo fighting on that card? He's got like a big fight on that card. Aldo's in a comeback surge right now after knocking out Renato Moicano. I mean, that was gigantic. It might not be labeled yet.
Yeah, I'm trying to see.
Sometimes, like, the UFC doesn't put it up on its website. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't put it up.
Rose.
What's
Rose
that?
Rose Namajunas.
Oh, Rose. Oh. Is that Jessica Andrade?
Mm-hmm. Ooh. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's exciting.
Ooh. That girl's a little pit bull. Yeah. Jessica Andrade is terrifying. Did you see that knockout of Karolina Kowalkiewicz?
Yeah.
She KO'd her with that overhand right. Jesus. Anderson Silva and Jared Cannonier. Holy shit. Aldo, that's right. Volkanovski. That's a fucking fight. Aldo and Alexander Volkanovski. Volkanovski is a fucking juggernaut. Little Nog still throwing down all these years later. Against Ryan Spann, Thiago Alves, against Staropoli. I don't know that gentleman. Man.
Ooh.
PJ Penn versus Clay Guida. What?
What?
Damn. Okay. All right. Nice. That's a good card, man. Yeah. What day is that, Jamie?
May 11th.
Oh, shit. Might have to have a fight companion. We haven't had a fight companion in forever. Herb, you should sit in on one of those if you're in town, man.
I would love to.
They're the best.
Okay.
But people get ridiculously hammered, and if Eddie Bravo starts throwing around conspiracy theories, you got to check your watch.
Right.
Damn, look at the time.
So we'll drink some beers and stuff like that. We'll do it. Okay, yeah.
Did you say it's May 11th, Gene?
Yeah.
I'm open right now. Yeah. Maybe we can make it happen.
But I'll be there.
You will be there. You will be there.
I found out ahead of time. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Brazilian one. Uh-huh, okay. Yeah. We'll get you in for one of these. We should get because most of the time it's not the four of us. Mm-hmm. Most of the time it's like two or three, and so we have room for others.
Okay.
You're a bad motherfucker. Hey, I appreciate
you. Thank you so
dearly.
Much for having me on, man.
Always cool hanging with you.
Yeah, good
Herb Dean, ladies and gentlemen, and tell people how they can find you on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, Herb Dean MMA.
On everything?
Yeah, on everything.
And HerbDean.com.
HerbDean.com.
Find out about your course.
Uh-huh. Yep.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Herb Dean, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.